It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with State Representative Jesse White about the big budget fight. Well, not really a fight. More of a ram through. More of bend over, grab your ankles. You're getting it anyway. You might as well smile. Kind of a budget ram through. Kind of what it was. Call it what it was. The Republicans completely in control. Not a word from the Democrats was needed, wasn't asked for, they weren't in the room, they had no part of it. So we're going to find out what the opposition, who really wasn't an opposition, was saying, at least here. Didn't have much of a voice over at the Capitol because the Republicans did every backdoor trick. And again, you know, this is the party of transparency. This is the party of accountability. This is the party of we're going to do things better than they used to in the past. No more late night deals. No more thievery in the night. Yet, what exactly have we been seeing? They rammed through a voter ID bill almost 11 o'clock at night. That budget they rammed through at night. Like, you know, again, you got to kind of wonder if up is down and back is forward, what left is right. Because everything they say, they do just the opposite. So it'll be interesting to talk with State Representative Jesse White about the experience. Also, in the second hour, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman Jim Byrne. Where do they go? You know, look, this is an opportunity for the Democrats. What are they going to do? This budget is going to be painful. This budget is going to be harmful to taxpayers. It's going to be harmful to communities. How do you then turn this around? How do you use that messaging? We'll see what Jim Byrne has to say about that. Also in the second hour, Hamish Drummond, a worker from Scotland, is going to be talking about the big hundreds of thousands of people in the streets in the U.K., something I think we should be talking about here. Workers should be in the streets here demanding, hey, there's a lot of profit out there. Later on, I've got some numbers going to knock your socks right off your feet. Later on, I've got some information. Man, I don't know how in this country we're not screaming in the streets daily at the redistribution of wealth. Just not getting it. But we will. So we're going to talk about the big protests today. Almost a general strike, if you will. Several hundred thousand people in the streets. And in the third hour, we're going to talk with Jeffrey Ernest Friedman, research director at maplight.org, about the, I guess Stephen Colbert now has a super PAC. And what is that going to mean? Now can everybody have a super PAC? Will media outlets be able to then endorse and attack candidates for federal office? Not sure. That's why we'll talk to him because, you know, while it's funny on one hand, you know, comedians got a, you know, got this pact, this could be dangerous precedent. This could be used in a very, very dangerous way. So we'll talk about that. I don't know if you saw it today, but the Greek lawmakers, they voted today to fast-track implementation of their country's new austerity measures. And they're doing it so they can get the IMF money. They're doing it so the European Bank, the European Union, the Central Bank over there, the IMF, throws them some bucks. Remember yesterday the Parliament narrowly approved their package. Massive spending cuts, a couple tax increases, mostly on working people, and really a fire sale, just the sale of government assets. So people were in the streets yesterday, today as well. The new measures, like I said, big spending cuts on health care, big spending cuts on defense, tax increases on heating oil and the self-employed, and, you know, the big privatization scheme, the payoff. $70 billion in state-owned assets. So basically the fire sale is on. They created this crisis, and now there's an opportunity to cash in. This is what the IMF and the World Bank has been doing to third world countries for generations. Their leaders put them in trouble. They need money quick. So you go to the IMF or the loan shark, and the loan shark says, well, you know, I'll give you some money, but it's going to cost you. You're going to have to privatize all of your public works, all of your welfare programs, all of your pension programs, all of that. Privatize it. Your water, your electricity, all of it. Privatize it. All of your social services, get rid of. Sell off your assets. Sell off your coliseums, sell off all of your arenas, sell off all of your assets. Sell it off. Because there's profit to be made. And then in come the bottom feeders. You know, I go back and I think of one of the countries down in Latin America who went through this whole, one of many, but this one in particular, went through the whole IMF thing. And they sold off their water supply to Bechtel. And Bechtel jacked up their rates like 300%. And it was even law that you could not put a bucket out in your front yard and collect rainwater. That was illegal. This is the kind of privatized world we're going to be living in. This is the direction, and it's going to happen here. The reason I'm talking about Greece is because this is going to happen here. We're just seeing the first stages of this. We're at the beginning of the journey to privatize this country even further. We're at the beginning. We still got a huge pot of money in Social Security. We've still got Medicare. We've still got social programs that are still ours. Education that is still ours. Now, they're working diligently to change that. They're creating crisis after crisis. They're handing out, just like Greece did, handed out all of the money to the very wealthy, didn't enforce the tax collection for the very wealthy, and the very wealthy walked away, abdicating their responsibility to the country. And look what's happened. It is now collapsing. So how are they going to fix this? Well, of course, they're going to fix it by cutting the services that the people need, cutting their health, cutting their defense, cutting job programs, cutting all of that, cutting education, cutting all of that, selling off all that is the states, and then raising taxes on the working people. Individual now. Evidently, in Greece, if you make $12,000 a year or $17,000 or $18,000 a year, they're raising the income. They're raising the tax-free portion to $11,600. So you tax-free, you pay up to $11,600. Anything over that, they're going to tax. It used to be $17,400. So there has been a massive tax increase for the working people of that country. And that's going to happen here. Understand. This is the game we're going to see playing out before our eyes. It's going to happen. And the Republicans want us in the same situation as the folks in Greece. We're in the mess we're in because of the pro-business, pro-wealthy agenda. That's why we're here. And we can only give so much to the top before their weight crushes the rest of us. We understand that, I think. And you look at the budget that just happened yesterday. And the winners, and who were the losers? Stop and think about who the winners were. The winners were the judiciary, the court system, and the police. Because they want to make sure, and of course the prisons, because they want to make sure when you get out of line, there's someone there to take care of you and make an example of you and lock you away. That's what it's about. The winners yesterday were the lieutenant governor's office, 74% funding increase. He got a boost of over $360,000. And let's not forget that you're on the big new monster SUV for him and for, of course, Mrs. First Second Lady. And who were the losers? Well, the losers were the rest of us. The environment, environmental programs, taking a major hit. In fact, the former DEP secretary under Tom Ridge said, quote, I think over the last 8 years, DEP has been crippled, and this budget doesn't make it any better. At a time when we need that oversight, where we need that protection, it's just not going to be there. State health programs took a hit. And, you know, I look at Stephen Bloom, the guy who's my representative, said, today we're doing what some said couldn't be done. You mean screwing old people and poor people and children? I think you've been talking about that for quite some time, Steve. Because you did. You stuck it to them. Congratulations. And I agree with Minority Leader Frank Dermody, who said, I'm ashamed of it all. And that it doesn't have to be this way. I found Camille George's statement that this is a cynical document of despair to be spot on. And I also found Mark Lingotti's statement that this is passing the buck to be, again, spot on. Because we're hurting, as Joe Markozik said, we are hurting the chronically ill, the handicapped, the elderly, children. This budget contains horrendous cuts to education. And you look down the line, what got whacked? Child welfare programs got cut. Department of Health got cut. Education got cut. Universities took about a 19% cut. Community colleges about a 10% cut. And you look at the story yesterday, came right out. As soon as this was done, tuition hikes. We're going to see a 7.5% tuition hike across the board. Stop and think about that. Going to see a 50% boost in the technology fees, so more and more money out of the pockets of students. And you look at the fact that community colleges have been under attack. In fact, the costs of community colleges have skyrocketed. In fact, there's a new report out from the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. And they found that the cost of community college right now, over the last decade, has risen dramatically, outpacing inflation and income growth. They say from 1999 to 2009, median household income adjusted for inflation rose 6% statewide, while tuition at public two-year colleges increased, get this, 94.4%. So incomes went up by 6, the cost of going to the community colleges, 94.4%. These are supposed to be the places where everybody has an opportunity. And when you see that kind of massive increase, it should scare you. When you're seeing tuition fees that have already been going up and up and up and up, jumping by another 7.5% here in the state, that should worry you. Because what we're doing is we're making the future inaccessible. And you look at the USA Today. They came out with their... their study from the Department of the Education Department, who unveiled some of their numbers, and you know the lists of least expensive colleges and the lists of the most expensive colleges, and you look at I've never heard of California State University. Evidently, it's a small institution. They have the fastest increasing tuition in the country. And it's a direct reflection of the budget situation in California. What's happened? They've stopped investing in it. They stopped. And what is that going to do to our future? What's that going to do to our kids? My kids. You know, I worry about this. Just think about the next 10 years. 10 more years if tuition goes up another 94.4% in community colleges. You're going to put it out of the reach of some folks. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Jesse White about this horrendous budget and where we go from here. Back after this.
They smashed up London, they cut all our hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cards, everyone yelling at me. When did I become a problem? How did the fall become online? The president says, I'm tightening the bill, the only one that's tightening is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. In Chicago Wednesday, the AFL-CIO announced a commitment to action to bring public and private partners together to promote investments in America's infrastructure. The goal is to work with a variety of partners to promote at least $10 billion in infrastructure investment over the next 5 years, as well as to provide training to 40,000 new apprentices and skills upgrades to 100,000 workers in green technologies and construction. The Incredible People's Movement in Ohio behind repealing SB 5 kicks into a new gear today. We Are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas says that a huge number of volunteers have collected way more than enough signatures to get the gutting of collective bargaining on the November ballot, so the people of Ohio can kill the attack on collective bargaining.
It's just really exciting. You know, we have over 10,000 volunteers on the ground that have been collecting signatures, which is unprecedented in Ohio history. After June 30th, then we really turn into campaign mode, and we have to make sure that everyone that's been involved stays involved, that we continue talking to our friends and family, and that we make sure that they turn out in November so we can repeal Senate Bill 5.
Hundreds of economists are calling on Congress to raise the national debt ceiling, Jesse Russell reports.
A letter signed by 235 economists and five Nobel laureates has been delivered to Congress calling for a swift movement on reaching a deal regarding raising the debt limit. During a conference call on Wednesday, Nobel Prize-winning economist Robert Salo explained that if the debt ceiling isn't raised, the money used to pay interest will need to come from somewhere.
If the interest is to be paid to pacify the foreign holders of Treasury debt, then other obligations of the federal government, salaries or whatever, will not be paid. Or bills from defense contractors will not be paid.
Former Council of Economic Advisers Chairman Alan Blinder said the debt ceiling needs to go up to finance this year's budget. That's a decision Congress has already made.
Failure to raise the debt ceiling at this point would be essentially declaring those decisions illegal, null and void, whatever, not enabling them to be carried out.
President Barack Obama had strong words for Congress on Wednesday. He criticized Congress for taking time off for vacations while such an important issue was left hanging in the balance. Obama said he's willing to make $1 trillion in cuts if Republicans compromise and eliminate tax breaks for millionaires and oil companies.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Former Wyoming Republican Senator Alan Simpson had some choice words for his Republican colleagues on the Hill today. The reality is they failed to reach a deal on this deficit, and it's got Simpson all ticked off. And Simpson's a guy who's really been known for some colorful language. And truth of the matter is he gets away with it because he's one of the elder statesmen, if you will. Like I said, today he went after his Republican colleagues for kowtowing to Grover Norquist, our co-governor. And he's also the head of the Washington-based Americans for Tax Reform, another one of those groups. But he's pushing for Geithner to say, you know what, stick to that August 2nd deadline. But he pointed out something really important. He said, we're at 15% revenue. Historically, we've been closer to 20% revenue. We've never had a war without a tax, and now we've got two, adding that this entire situation is nothing but BS. And I absolutely, there's one thing I do agree with, the former Wyoming governor, or senator. This is BS. And you want to know what else is BS? This budget. That's why I've asked Jesse White, a Pennsylvania state representative, to come talk to us about the budget and how this budget got through. Representative White, thanks for taking time for us.
A pleasure to be on with you.
You know, I look at this budget, and we talked about it all last night. This is the Republicans' baby. This is theirs, front to back, the whole nine yards, because I don't think you guys had much to say in this.
If by not much to say you mean we had absolutely nothing to say about it, then that would be a pretty accurate statement.
So let's look at what's this going to do to, let's say, me as a parent. What's going to happen to my kids?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick, I really think that the biggest hit in this entire thing is on the kind of education complex in Pennsylvania and public education from top to bottom. I mean, if you don't realize by now that there's an all-out assault on public education in Pennsylvania, you're just not paying attention. By underfunding public education, what they're doing is they're trickling it down. It's causing property tax increases. It's shrinking it's blown up classroom sizes. We're losing good teachers. We're losing support staff. So the quality of education is going down, and the cost of it to the local taxpayer is going up. All the time we're sitting on over $600 million in surplus. It's indefensible.
Well, it's indefensible from your point of view. But if you look at it from their point of view, they need to create another crisis. What happens is we have to give away all of this wealth to the very wealthy, to big corporations, and we create these crises so that you have people who don't believe in government, don't believe in the commons, running things into the ground, and then they turn around when things don't work and say, see, told you it wasn't going to work.
You're right, but one of the interesting things that happened today was we actually, you know, the actual budget bill went through last night. Today we did the school code, the education code bill, and there was some very intense interrogation on the floor of the House of Representatives, because it's funny, I think even the Republicans realize that they have to try to sell this the right way, and they've started just lying. And the way they're doing it is they're saying, in this budget, we have increased the state spend on education. So they're trying to blame federal stimulus dollars as the explanation for why there's less money, but the cuts are far below the stimulus money that's not there anymore. So they're tweaking, they're playing games with their words and saying, and the Republican members, guys like Rick Saccone from Allegheny County, we went on their websites, they have releases up bragging, saying we increased the state spend for education. But the overall amount of money that went to every school district is being decimated. And I got up on the floor today and asked to interrogate any member of the House who could answer and explain to me how their districts are getting more money this year than they were last year, and nobody could do it.
Well, because you see all around the state, I see school districts laying people off. Here in Harrisburg, 214 teachers and staff they're getting rid of this year. To me, that doesn't tell me you're giving them more money. It tells me you're cutting them off at the knees.
Right, and I think this is one area where, you know, one of the things that this Republican Party is very good at is doing a bad thing and then selling it as a good thing.
Yeah, they're better. They're better than you are.
They are. And I think in a lot of ways in the Democratic Party, some of our policies are harder to. Yeah, they're not 10-second soundbite policies.
Yeah, see, you lose the messaging war because it actually takes some thought.
Absolutely. But what I've been telling people on the education stuff is I think that this is one of those rare instances where their messaging machine is going to fail them, because they could stand there tonight and put out all the press releases and all the, you know, all the goofy taxpayer-funded media they want to try to sell this. But at the end of the day, taxpayers aren't stupid, and parents aren't stupid. And they're going to realize that they are paying more in property taxes, and the quality of their child's education is being dramatically reduced. So something's got to give. And I know the inclination is blame the teachers union. They've tried to make the teachers union the devil in all this somehow. But this goes far beyond that, and I think that the voters are smart enough to see that, and I think that these representatives who are going around thumping their chest on this false assumption are going to have to do some serious explaining next year.
Yeah, because at the end of this, it's still you're still harming the future of this state. Look, you know, for 30 years, we've been underfunding our transportation. Our infrastructure is crumbling under our feet. Pennsylvania has some of the worst roads in the country because we haven't been investing in it. What I see happening, we're talking about doing the exact same thing to education, beginning to take us down that road to where in 5 or 6 years, we're going to have a crumbling education system. And that's when, and this is the reality, that's when they're going to come in and really privatize and completely take over education. And we're going to have a two-class system in this country, those who can afford private education and those who cannot.
You're right, and if you followed the news this week, well, I'm sure you did, but if people are following the news this week, that was one of the big moments of intrigue was, could they jam this voucher plan through in the 11th hour? And that was, you know, there was a big concern that they were going to try to do that vouchers were going to be the cure-all, and again, thank goodness that, you know, it's so easy to demonize the parties and everything, but one of the things that was very enlightening to me was as I talked to Republican members, I actually sit on the aisle, so I talk to Republicans a lot, and I'll talk to individual members, and there a lot of them are not sold on vouchers because it doesn't help their district. It doesn't help their kids.
It's a bad
they
idea.
Realize what this is really all about. So I think that this is a battle that we can win. The fight against this ridiculous voucher idea is a fight that we can win, but we got to be aggressive.
I'll tell you this, Representative White. I grew up in my school years were the 70s. I grew up in Cleveland, and in Cleveland we had busing, which was a really bad idea. And to me, vouchers just seems like the next step. People don't know how to fix the small amount of schools that are failing, so this is the next step. It's just like busing. Another bad idea, another waste of taxpayer money, and another way to destroy education. And because I really believe this. I don't think they have a clue of how to fix some 144 schools that are failing. When you have 3,100 doing pretty well, they want to throw the whole system into a mess.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm also a product of Pennsylvania public schools. I'm a Bethlehem Center graduate of 1996. And you know what? I'm standing in the state capitol right now at age 33 as a state rep. I think I've done okay for myself. So I know that the public school system in Pennsylvania can work. And, you know, what we're seeing now is, I think the thing with the vouchers, a lot of people are starting to realize is it doesn't make any sense. You know, and when I've had people come in and try to lobby me on this, and they say, we need to throw a lifeline to these failing kids. And I say, well, if you throw them a lifeline, you're saying by default, you're going to let everybody else sink.
Yep.
That's exactly what you're saying. You're going to let everybody else sink. And my job wasn't, and my obligation isn't to some of the kids in my district. My obligation is to all of them. They all at least deserve the opportunity to have an educational experience where they can succeed instead of creating a permanent two-tiered system that's gonna be a disaster.
Well, let me ask you this: where do we go from here? The voucher's not going to move this right now. Probably in the fall we'll see it rear its ugly head again. Where do we go from here? What do we do to fight back against this budget? It's a done deal now, but I'm being told this is the first step. Next year is going to be worse. What do we do? What's the direction?
Well, that's a two-part question. Overall, I think that what we need to do is, you know, we need to make sure that when the Republicans do a lot of this stuff, we need to make sure the rhetoric matches the reality. So we need to be very aggressive and we can't be complacent. When they say things that are patently untrue because they're good sound bites, but they're not accurate, we need to go after them. We need to call them out on it. And I don't know if you're familiar. I've had a kind of a running feud with Representative Jim Christiana, who's like the big voucher proponent, actually. And we border each other in Beaver County. I share a little bit of Beaver County with him. And, you know, every time he does something that's over the line, in my opinion, I'm in the newspaper and we're having it out, or we're on Twitter, or we're here, or we're there. You know, and that's what it's incumbent on us to do. And I think that this budget process I'm looking around the state capitol and I'm seeing good representatives from all over the state, people like Matt Smith and Josh Shapiro and Steve Sinisterra and Matt Bradford, good, young, intelligent, aggressive legislators who we're jumping onto the internet. We're making people informed. We're not just accepting it as the status quo. So I think that's what we need to do from an overall standpoint. Obviously, you know, from a political standpoint, we need to go out and find good candidates that are going to go out and work to beat these guys next year. Yeah, you know, that's a huge part of it. And on the vouchers end of it specifically, I think we need to do a couple of things. We need to kind of expose the money side of this, the kind of seamy underbelly. You know, everybody wants to talk about the teachers union. Well, I can tell you what, the teachers union hasn't done financially nearly enough for me or a lot of my colleagues as they have done, as Freedom Works and some of these other groups are doing for these voucher proponents. You know, we need to expose that money. We need to expose what this is really all about. That's one part of it. The other part of it is, you know, I think that they already realize they're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, this week the Commonwealth Foundation sent something out to everybody in the Capitol.
Did you get your
lifesavers?
Yeah, did you get your lifesavers?
Not only did I get my lifesavers, and it's a perfect example. The lifesaver said, you know, we need, it's not too late to throw a lifesaver to failing children, blah, blah, blah. I took a picture of it with my phone and put it up on Facebook and said I was offended by this. And I said, if you're going to, you know, made a joke, I said, if you want me to make a fundamental change in Pennsylvania education policy that's going to screw over all the kids and parents in my district, you better at least come with some, you know, Big League Chew or some better candy.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. You know, when I read that, because I think it was yours that I read, I was really ticked off because they have changed the 3 R's, I guess, in
yep.
You know, the little Tea Party think tank over there changed the 3 R's to rape, riots, and robbery. And I'm going,
well, it's funny. I put that up on my Facebook page. Within that same day, the Commonwealth Foundation, the right-wing think tank, who's Matthew Brouillette, who's one of the main guys over there, who actually looks just like me. It's a little scary.
It is.
He sent out, they put something up on their site, you know, kind of making fun of my Facebook post. And they said, well, maybe this will get your attention. And they started talking about rape. And they framed the argument to say that if you're not for school vouchers, you're condoning rape in public schools.
Yep.
And to me, the extremity of that tactic, because it sounds so ridiculous. If that's the best they can do, that tells me that they know they're fighting a losing fight and they're getting desperate.
Well, they're desperate. Here's the thing. You know, I don't even really spend much time on the Tea Party think tank over there because they're bought and paid for by the Koch brothers and the Scaifes and the billionaire class. So they're just they're just carrying that water. So to me, they have no credibility whatsoever. And I don't even know that he believes half the stuff that he spews.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, you know, you're in the building and you're working around these people and you see them all the time. And it is funny, you know, when you kind of get kind of a, you know, you can totally disagree with something somebody says and still not think they're a bad person, you know, especially if it's in the context of their job. And I've seen a lot of that this year. And I've seen a lot of Republican representatives in this building just kind of roll their eyes. They're not at all on board with this agenda as I think that the party would have you believe.
I think
you know, for example, if they had the votes to get vouchers done, it would have been done by now.
Because you can't stop it, and that's the reality. Yeah. Everything that comes out of here, you and the rest of the Democratic Party have no say in whatsoever.
And, you know, and I think in some ways that terrifies the Republicans because, you know, and that's why this budget got done on time. When we were stuck up here late a year and a half ago, it was mainly because the Senate Republicans and the governor were in kind of a you-know-what-in contest to see who could, you know, hold the blame the other side. It became a war of attrition. I think the thing that's terrifying to the Republicans now is that they run everything, so they can't blame us for anything.
Nope.
And they're so good at blaming other people and, you know, creating these problems. Well, now, and you're starting to see it, for example, they just did the welfare code tonight, and they're talking about all this fraud, waste, and abuse and all these different things. Well, I, for one, I can't wait to see these hundreds of million dollars of fraud, waste, and abuse that no one has been able to document yet. So they're going to be at the point where after this budget, they're going to be running out of scapegoats, and they're going to have to start answering for their own record. And I can tell you that's going to be a much difficult thing. For the last 4 years, they've had it easy, at least in the state house, being in the minority and just throwing fireballs at us. Now they have to govern, and that is a much more difficult task as they're learning.
Absolutely. I've said it a number of times. They're good at campaigning, not very good at governing. They tend to run the car into the ditch. Representative White, I appreciate the time. Great conversation. Love to have you back again real soon.
Anytime, just let me know.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Together,
America better. The Rick Smith Show.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Our Borowitz Report. Speaking on behalf of congressional Republicans, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said today that trillions could be cut from the federal budget if Congress can agree to eliminate empathy. He said, quote, the current budget is bursting at the seams with pet projects that reek of empathy. He said, as a nation, we can no longer afford to spend money on people's basic survival needs like a bunch of drunken sailors. Representative Cantor noted that the word empathy comes from the Greek word pathos, which means pathetic. And that's exactly what helping people is, pathetic, according to Cantor. He goes on to say, we Americans should get out of the habit of using Greek words. Look at what trouble that's gotten the Greeks into. Straight into bankruptcy. Once congressional Republicans eliminate such empathy-laden budget items as lunches for poor children, medicine for the indigent, and oxygen for seniors, Representative Cantor said, we can move from cutting empathy to cutting humanity. With humanity removed from the budget, he said, that's where we really get some savings. By eliminating the food, medicine, and oxygen necessary to sustain life, he says, we will reduce the single biggest drain on the U.S. economy. People. Ending on an optimistic note, Representative Cantor said, by eliminating people, by the middle of the century, the United States will be successfully transformed into one of the biggest unmanned predator drones. Elsewhere, presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann today visited historic Monticello, where she called it the home of Jeffrey Dahmer. So there you go. So good news. Harry Reid announced today the Senate is not taking a 4th of July break. No vacation for you. Canceled. And the truth of the matter is, look, you know, when I have a deadline, I have to stay at work. So congratulations, boys and girls. Welcome to the real world. get to work. You know, they love, the Republicans love to say, well, get a job. Well, get yours done. The reality is they've held this country ransom long enough. I mean, the hostage situation continues. Republicans want this. And now it's come out again. And we talked about this before. Toomey was one of the guys who first pushed it. We need to have, in order for us to consider raising the debt limit, we want a balanced budget amendment. Which, yeah, good luck on that happening right away. It's going to happen. But, you know, here again, this idea that we can snap our fingers and things like that get done. Stop and think about this for a second. There was a short period of time in the 1830s under Andrew Jackson that we had a surplus. Since then, we've been in debt continuously from the beginning of the country. And sometimes debt isn't a bad thing. A nice portion of our debt is held by who? Well, us. Our Social Security, investors. It's where old people put their money. When I get to be old, that's where I'll put my money. The Treasury bills are the safest investment on this planet because it's backed by the full faith and credit of our government, of we the people. Do we really? I mean, stop and think about it. Do we really want to risk that credibility? And the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, they issued a warning saying that raising the U.S. debt ceiling is crucial for the global economy. They said the federal debt ceiling should be raised expeditiously to avoid a severe shock to the economy and the world financial market. Here again, you know, Republicans understand, they understand hostage situations, and they know that Democrats, you know, they have that whole empathy thing going. They care about people. You know, what a flaw. And look, the Republicans don't have that flaw. And they see Democrats, and they go, we found their weak spot, those people. And we just, you know, threatened to harm those people, and the Democrats will cave. And if you look at what Boehner wrote in his letter yesterday, he said, look, tax increases ain't going to fly. It's off the table, man. Off the table. He said there will be no debt limit increase unless it includes spending cuts that are larger than the debt limit increase. So even if they raise it $500 billion, they want more than that in cuts. He says, you know what? Not going to happen. We're not passing it through the House. Not happening. And you got McConnell basically saying, you know what? Come sit down with us and we'll tell you why. Why it's not, why what you want is not going to happen. It's one of those things that kind of makes you go, we hired these people. And to take the hostage situation that much further, and you got to love this, McConnell announced yesterday that he was going to vote against those Bush-era trade deals, which I'm happy about. You know, the ones with Colombia, South Korea, Panama. And you go, well, why would, does he care about American workers? Does he care about American corporations? Does he care about the country and the middle class? And does he care about that? Well, no. He doesn't care about that at all. He cares about the trade adjustment assistance that the Democrats are insisting has to be part of these job-killing trade agreements. And understand, they're going to. And I think even the Democrats who are saying these are going to create jobs, no, we're going to lose jobs over this. So what happens, what's going to happen? This trade adjustment assistance, you know that stuff that helps you and me? You know, when we lose our job, it gives us a little bit of help. You know, when we lose our job because of their bad trade policy, gives us a little help. And remember, these policies are bad for us, just not for them. And according to Reuters, at least four of the Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee say they will vote against the South Korean free trade agreement, if the White House sticks to the plan to include the implementation of legislation renewing the trade adjustment assistance retraining program. And you go, why? Well, because they don't care about you. Warren Hatch, Kyle, Coburn, Thune, those are your four Republicans who have said, no, we're not going to do it. Not at all. And it's even weirder than that. You've got another handful of Republicans, Rand Paul, Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Mike Space Lee. They've put out legislation now that will eliminate all taxes on gold and silver coins. And they want to use them as legal tender. They want to use them on the same plane as you use your dollars, your Federal Reserve notes. And right now, Utah is the only state in the country that uses these gold coins as legal tender. And you know, I wonder who certifies that and who decides that they're gold, but that's a whole other discussion. But Republicans in 12 other states are, you know, they're trying to do the same thing. Again, it's one of these, another one of these divisive things, trying to divide the country. And the reality is there have been some pretty stern warnings that we could be headed down a massive, massive hole. Because the vast majority of the economists are saying, look, if we return to the gold standard, which is what Rand Paul and Ron Paul and all of these really way out right wingers want, if we return to the gold standard that Nixon took us off, it's going to be disastrous for the global economy. Just disastrous. And again, they love a crisis. And that's what this would create. Another big crisis. And what happens in crisis? The very wealthy, the very top of the mountain, they're the ones who benefit. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
I'm ready to do what has to be done for the next generation, with the courage to fight for freedom, with the courage to fight for America. That's why I'm announcing today that I'm running for president.
And when you look so far,
and welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Rick Santorum was on with Greta Van Susteren. And, you know, she's talking about, well, you know, the debt ceiling. She's talking about President Obama. And, you know, she said, you know, they're going after the rich people. You know, they want to tax private jet owners. And Santorum had something really interesting to say, and I got to play this clip because it's one of those. He's now understand he's talking about he's defending millionaires and billionaires. He's defending the guys who fly around on the corporate jets. Listen to the anger in his voice. This is just pure brilliance.
Well, this is from the man who was going to bring Washington together. And the man who was going to be a transformational figure, someone who was going to bring hope and change to Washington, talking about Republican constituencies. I don't think I've ever said the word Democrat constituencies, as if the world is divided between Republican constituencies and Democrat constituencies. This is a man who said, oh, there's no red America or blue America, there's just America. And you see the most ugly, divisive press conference I think I've ever seen from a president who just, all he did was just pour acrimony onto what's going on here in Washington, D.C., offered no solutions other than let's tax rich people.
I mean, that's kind of the idea. They have done very, very well there, Tricky Ricky, and to have you visibly angry protecting them, being their water boy, kind of makes me curious about your background. Kind of makes me curious about why you're into this. This whole idea that we're protecting the millionaires and billionaires while we're taking food from the mouths of children, health care from people who need it, kicking people off of adult basic. You stop and look at all of the, it's a balancing act. And right now what's happening is the CEO class doing very, very well. Ever the rest of us not so well. And do you remember during the Bush years where it seemed that every single failure was met with a promotion? You know, every time someone screwed up, it was, all right, we're going to make you. Heck, nice job. Move ahead. We have a CEO class that's no different. Only they don't get promotions because they're already at the top. They get richer. They fill their pockets. And you look at some of the folks that are on this list that one of the listeners sent me. Martin Sullivan, former CEO of AIG. Now, remember, AIG was the company that basically brought the country to its knees. They were the ones out there insuring every crummy bet possible. They were the ones insuring every bad mortgage-backed derivative, every one of these big, giant-sized boxes of turds. They were the ones doing it. Well, for his wonder in all this, he left AIG, got a nice package out the door. He now works at a British insurance firm, Willis Group, making a possibility of $1 million a year, another $4 million if he stays 3 years. So, you know, he's done all right. Good for him. Tony Hayward, the guy, remember the guy from BP? You know, had that whole little Deepwater Horizon problem, all that little tiny spill in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, killed 11 workers. Remember that? Well, when he got fired, when he left, he got a year's salary, $1.7 million, put in his pocket, had a whole bunch of stock that he could take with him, worth millions more. But what he did recently, launched a new energy company there in the UK that raised more than $2 billion in a public offering. And now he's going to go through the developing markets, the emerging world, and he's going to make a couple of bucks doing that. Good for him. I mean, again, you know, we make sure we take care of our CEOs. One of my absolute favorites is a guy named John Thain. Do you remember John Thain? The guy from Merrill Lynch, the former CEO there, who just decided that, you know, I need my office redone for, I think it was like $18 or $20 million. I forget, but it was just outrageous. And, you know, Merrill Lynch didn't do so well. In fact, you know, had some really big problems. When he left there, he got the job at CIT, a $6 million a year cash job, annual bonus of up to $1.5 million. He did all right for himself. And let's not forget, $3.6 billion in bonuses that he granted to the Merrill bankers when he left. Our money. And you look at these CEOs, the CEO of Transocean, another beautiful guy. When he left the company, he took with him $21 million. You know, just a little going away, present. You look at Don Blankenship, the former CEO of Massey Energy. You know, they were losing money hand over fist. In fact, the company lost $167 million in 2010. What did he walk away with? $14.5 million severance package, $7 million pension, $32 million in deferred compensation, little money in his pocket. Just a little walking around change. And you go, well, why are you bringing that up? Why is it important that these CEOs who have failed us, and there's a bunch more, why is that important? It's important because if you look at this report that just came out, the S&P 500 companies are sitting on close to $1 trillion in cash, and they're making massive profits. And there's an economist from Northeastern University who just released a study that pretty much finds out what we already knew. Corporations got fat, and you basically got nothing. According to the study, between the second quarter of 2009 and the fourth quarter of 2010, right after Obama took over all the way up until the end of 2010, real national income in the U.S. increased by $528 billion. Pre-tax corporate profits by themselves had increased by $464 billion, while aggregate real wages and salaries rose by only $7 billion, or 1%. Over the six-quarter period that they talked about, from the second quarter of 2009 to the last quarter of 2010, corporate profits captured 88% of all of the growth in real national income. And you know what wages got? 1%. So that means you got 1% of the pie. The very wealthy, they took 88%. Last year, the top executives in this country, they saw their salaries increase by 27%. Workers saw it by just almost 2%. You look at the fact that income equality in this country is worse than it's been since the 1920s, where the richest folks in this country are doing very, very well, and you and me, we're the ones that are struggling. And you look at this budget, and I'm going to go back to this budget. This budget kills the working class. It harms the poor people in this state. It harms those who can't take care of themselves, the disabled, the sick, the elderly. And for what? So that we can have more tax handouts for corporations. So that we can not tax the drillers. So that we can not close the Delaware loophole. So that we can continue to hand out billions. Does it make sense to you? Doesn't make any sense to me on any level.
Listening to the public's reaction, Rick, sadly, and I say this not with pleasure, but listening to the public reaction, most people are saying, oh, you know, he did a good job. He stayed within the confines of what he promised. Nobody talked about closing the Delaware loophole. Nobody even mentioned, and this is very... very disappointed. No one even mentioned the fact that he has stubbornly refused to tax the natural gas industry. The common theme is, well, you know, we were probably spending too much when Governor Rendell was here, and he's held back, and I support him. And that's sad, because those people who called in, Rick, are the same people who are going to get hurt.
Well, we'll see. We'll see who the people who get hurt on this are. And then we'll go from there. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pennsylvania Democratic Chairman Jim Byrne is going to be here to talk about this budget and some other things. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got any questions for the chairman, we're right back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
In Chicago Wednesday, the AFL-CIO announced a commitment to action to bring public and private partners together to promote investments in America's infrastructure. The goal is to work with a variety of partners to promote at least $10 billion in infrastructure investment over the next 5 years, as well as to provide training to 40,000 new apprentices and skills upgrades to 100,000 workers in green technologies and construction. The Incredible People's Movement in Ohio behind repealing SB 5 kicks into a new gear today. We Are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas says that a huge number of volunteers have collected way more than enough signatures to get the gutting of collective bargaining on the November ballot, so the people of Ohio can kill the attack on collective bargaining.
It's just really exciting. You know, we have over 10,000 volunteers on the ground that have been collecting signatures, which is unprecedented in Ohio history. After June 30th, then we really turn into campaign mode, and we have to make sure that everyone that's been involved stays involved, that we continue talking to our friends and family, and that we make sure that they turn out in November so we can repeal Senate Bill 5.
Hundreds of economists are calling on Congress to raise the national debt ceiling, Jesse Russell reports.
A letter signed by 235 economists and five Nobel laureates has been delivered to Congress calling for a swift movement on reaching a deal regarding raising the debt limit. During a conference call on Wednesday, Nobel Prize-winning economist Robert Salo explained that if the debt ceiling isn't raised, the money used to pay interest will need to come from somewhere.
If the interest is to be paid to pacify the foreign holders of Treasury debt, then other obligations of the federal government, salaries or whatever, will not be paid. Or bills from defense contractors will not be paid.
Former Council of Economic Advisers Chairman Alan Blinder said the debt ceiling needs to go up to finance this year's budget. That's a decision Congress has already made.
Failure to raise the debt ceiling at this point would be essentially declaring those decisions illegal, null and void, whatever, not enabling them to be carried out.
President Barack Obama had strong words for Congress on Wednesday. He criticized Congress for taking time off for vacations while such an important issue was left hanging in the balance. Obama said he's willing to make $1 trillion in cuts if Republicans compromise and eliminate tax breaks for millionaires and oil companies.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's a fact, if we think and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did.
Well, that's what's going on. You look at this budget, who's going to pay for it? It's going to come off the backs of my children. It's going to come off the backs of the elderly, the poor, the disabled. You know, but the sad reality is I think the Republicans have done the calculus. They've looked at the tea leaves. And they can rewrite history. I mean, you look at the reality. This guy was a personal assistant. He was like a financial personal assistant to John Lennon is now claiming that Lennon would have voted for Reagan. You might as well just rewrite history. You got Sarah Palin who believes that Paul Revere was firing warning shots to warn the British. Why not Lennon voting for Reagan? Anyway, this budget, just nuts. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman Jim Byrne to come talk to us and where we go from here. Jim, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to be on the show.
You know, I look at this budget, and I got to tell you, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, and it's going to be very harmful.
It is, and we've done everything we could as a minority party in the last 6 months to warn Pennsylvanians as to the inevitability of this draconian budget. It's going to hurt working, middle-class families, retirees, children, college students, homeowners. Higher property taxes are an inevitability. Tuition hikes for Pennsylvania students, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that is against what we as working-class Pennsylvanians fight for is in this budget, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I'm listening to the Republicans here today trying to ram through, I think it's House Bill 330, that they're trying to cap the amount that school districts can raise in property taxes to fill the gap that the state is not filling anymore. Again, you know, what it seems to me is they want to destroy public education completely, and they want to handcuff communities. They just want to handcuff the local community to save their schools.
Absolutely right. I mean, here we are with the most important demographic in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the future, young men and young women who want a fair education, an opportunity to be competitive in this region and in the surrounding states. And the funding that is necessary for them to be competitive, the funding for which Governor Ed Rendell fought so hard to implement, is gone. And families... How can we market this Commonwealth to young families or those coming here to start a family? Well, we don't have education.
Yep.
It does not make any sense. And he refuses. What makes it worse is the fact that this man and those around him refuse to even have a conversation about a compromise or a negotiation. That is not how you do business in public office.
Well, this is how the Republicans do business. This is, and from all the legislators that I've talked to, the Democrats have not even had a voice in this budget. In fact, haven't even been allowed in the room. So for a party, and the Republicans ran on, we're going to be about transparency and accountability and open government, they have been anything but.
Correct. And, you know, they played on the fear factor. And I think I may have said this on your program, but let me, if I may, just digress for a second. When I was mayor of Millville, and Hurricane Ivan came through, the borough was in a state of panic. And every day we had a briefing with the community. 600-plus residents who lost everything, they wanted to know when their furnace was going to be replaced. They wanted to know when their hot water heater was going to come in. They wanted to know when the washer and dryers were coming. They did not want to hear from Jim Byrne or the elected officials how long it was going to take or the reasons for the delay. Hypothetically, if Tom Corbett or one of these folks who was all about power came into that room and said, Jim Byrne and the Democrats are wrong. I can get you that hot water tank. I can get you that furnace. I can get it right now. They would have believed it. These folks, unfortunately and unconscionably, are playing on the fear, which they themselves created through George Bush over 8 years. They're playing on that fear to gain power at the expense of needy families. Unconscionable. We must continue to put this message into every household in Pennsylvania, that we must get the House back, we must reelect Barack Obama and Senator Casey.
Well, let me ask you this, from a Democratic Party's point of view, what they have done here, these massive, painful cuts that are going to harm people, that are going to be visible, this has got to be an opportunity for you to turn around and say, look, when they had control, look what they did to you.
Absolutely, and we have begun to do that. The Democratic Party for Pennsylvania in the last 12 months has retooled, rebuilt itself. We're doing some significant fundraising. We are messaging. And we've started to see that bears some fruit. Quite frankly, we're happy about that, but we're not done. The Senate district, where Senator Opaque passed away, we elected Judy Schlenk 58-42, despite a 3-1, margin, where the Republicans outspent us. The message was Tom Corbett and his followers are bad for this Commonwealth. It resonated. The polling we're doing now tells us that if Dan Honorato and Admiral Sestak were on the ballot right now, they would win. The dissatisfaction with Mr. Corbett's failed leadership and those that follow him is spreading. We are continuing the messaging and the retooling and the communicating, and we're working with our brothers and our sisters in the labor movement to relay that message to Pennsylvanians that these guys got it wrong. We cannot allow it to get any worse. We will continue to rebuild. We will hold the courthouses we have this November. We'll capture a couple of courthouses with Democratic commissioners, DAs, and mayors, and we will hold the fort for Barack Obama next year, and we'll get this back. We have to. We have no choice.
Well, you know, the hope is that people wake up and that they know that the painful cuts that are happening are because of this budget and this governor. And really, personally, I'm not in favor of any party having this kind of control. But when the Republicans do, look at what happens. And look,
you know,
who gets harmed.
A good point. You know, and there's always, there's something to be said about a good, healthy debate between ideological differences. I mean, I'm very blessed in Allegheny County currently to serve as the president of the county council. We have some Republicans on our council. We work for the betterment of the residents of Allegheny County. Now, granted, I will never stand with the Republicans on that council and pass out the same slate card. But in the chambers, we do what's in the best interest of our constituents. We will have a healthy debate and we'll move in a direction, but everybody is included. Everyone is welcome to the table. Everyone is welcome to have a discussion. Mr. Corbett is afraid to do that in Harrisburg because he does not know how to lead.
Here's what bothers me. We left a lot of revenue on the table. We left a lot on the table, made an awful lot of painful cuts that I think were completely unnecessary, all because we had a governor who took really a stupid pledge. A pledge that says that even if I trip over money in the street, I'm not going to pick it up.
Absolutely. $600 million in a surplus, I believe. When we are hurting, when we are hemorrhaging, when we have young men and women who can't get an education, a rainy day fund. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not just a rainy day. It's hail, it's lightning, it's thunder. That money needs to be used now. Maybe not all of it, but use some of it. Mitigate the damage of your budget. Don't make the draconian cuts. You have a surplus, and even the numbers you said you had a few months ago, 400, 500 million, it's more than that. Use some of it. Don't make this as painful as you are making it. But they refuse to even have that conversation. That only adds insult to injury and further reinforces our position that there is a complete disconnect between this administration and every single Pennsylvanian, Republican and Democrat alike.
Let me ask you this, Jim Byrne, Pennsylvania Democratic Party chairman. You know, some people that I've talked to say, well, you know, government's gotten bloated. We got this big debt, and, you know, this is shared sacrifice. You know, we need to all pitch in and roll up our sleeves and share in the pain. Are you seeing the pain being shared here?
I don't see pain when you have a governor who talks about reducing the fleet of automobiles, getting four brand-new vehicles for himself, the lieutenant governor, and their wives. I see an inconsistent message. I see someone who will not lead by example. Do as I say and not as I do is not going to work now in Pennsylvania or anywhere else. Anybody in this state who wants to follow a leader who refuses to lead by example is only fooling themselves and following someone who is, quite frankly, completely disingenuous.
What would you have done differently?
Well, what I would have done differently is, I would not have purchased additional vehicles. If I campaigned on a promise that I'm going to reduce the fleet, I'm going to reduce the fleet. I would not go to one line item in the Pennsylvania budget and start cutting education. I would bring everybody in from all parties, all demographics, and all interests and said, let's have a productive conversation on how we can spread this around where we all have to pull in our belts and do what's right for Pennsylvanians. We have to lead by example and show that we are willing ourselves to make very difficult cuts and very difficult decisions and be part of this solution with the people with whom we are blessed to represent. This man and his administration have not in one instance done anything remotely close to that.
Last bit of questioning I've got for you. You know, in the fall, the voucher thing is going to rear its ugly head, and there are a number of Democrats who are in favor of this. As party chairman, how do you handle this?
Well, the way we handle it is we remind other Democrats that this is a debate amongst a lot of various opinions in the Democratic Party. We welcome our brothers and sisters in the Democratic Party to have this conversation. Quite frankly, for those in the party who are supporting this, I would suggest to them, with all due respect, that the majority of Democrats in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania do not share in their belief that this is in the best interest of Pennsylvania. 61% of Pennsylvanians oppose it. We believe it will take money from taxpayers and put it into unaccountable private schools. We don't believe it saves tax dollars. It will increase costs to taxpayers. Public schools are underfunded by $4 billion. Private school vouchers are an experiment. It's a variable. We need constants. So I would respectfully ask them to rethink this position at a critical time in Pennsylvania's history.
Well, let's hope you have some success in pulling them around because, I have no idea what they're thinking. Just amazing.
You know what? But we're going to continue to have that conversation, my friend. We have to.
All righty. Jim Byrne, I appreciate the time. Always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and I wish you and your listeners a very happy and safe 4th of July weekend. Let's keep up the fight.
Same to you and your family. Thanks so much, Jim. Jim Byrne, Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gained by super-rich tax dodgers.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, in looking at this budget, and I know we've kind of been beating this to death, but the reality is it is what it is. We left a lot of revenue on the table. We left this Delaware loophole open. And the reality is it could be the Delaware loophole. It could be the Nevada loophole. It could be the Wyoming loophole. And I look at this Reuters story, this investigative report that they have done in looking at this house located at 2710 Thomas Avenue in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It is, you know, Cheyenne, Wyoming is a little town of about 60,000 people. But this one house, 2710 Thomas Avenue, has more than 2,000 companies registered to that address. And what they do, and it's kind of, you know, you hear it on the radio all the time, you can incorporate in Nevada. And it's really an interesting kind of a scam that's going on. What happens is you can set up a P.O. box and, you know, in this house or probably some of the other ones there or in Nevada or in Delaware, like happens here in Pennsylvania an awful lot. You run all of your information through there. They've got a CEO structure. They've got a whole structure there to hide who you are, to hide your assets. I mean, it's amazing what's going on with this. And, you know, Delaware, Wyoming, Nevada, they're kind of the same. In the same boat, and you look at how this whole thing works. I mean, it's really amazing. They set up these shell companies or these shelf companies, where they, you know, shell companies just somewhere where you can hide your identity, hide your assets, hide, you know, company information, whatever. A shelf company is a company that, you know, I'll start a company. And I won't do anything with it. I'll just file the paperwork, and it'll sit there for 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 years, whatever. And you buy those company names from me. And, you know, this place in Wyoming, the company that owned this house is the Wyoming Corporate Services Company. They have 700 of these shelf companies for sale in 37 different states. And they, you know... The article likened it to like owning a bottle of scotch. The older the bottle, the more expensive. So if you wanted a company like Brookside Management Incorporated, formed in 2004, you'd pay about $6,000 for it. Well, if you wanted Naughty Management, you know, just last May was formed, cost you about $600. That's what these folks do. And it's really remarkable at how underhanded and deceptive the whole practice of business has become. This must be what they're now teaching. This must now be it. You know, we're talking about Panama. Panama is going to be a big shell place like this, where all these companies are going to move their profits. You're going to have these safe havens like the Cayman Islands. But we've got them right here in the country, man. We've got Delaware. And we've got a governor and a legislature who refuses, absolutely refuses to close that. And it's just mind-blowing, Jake. It's just one of those moments where you go, what's wrong with us?
It is sad. I mean, the fact that they don't want to tax the drillers. By all estimates, we have lost in the last 2 years about $1 billion but for not taxing the Marcellus Shale drillers. That's just one area, $1 billion, and yet we're asking children to suffer. We're asking school districts to pay considerably more.
I don't know that we're asking. We're just imposing. You will suffer, you child.
Cutting,
you.
And the worst of all, and I don't mean to take the cuts to the school districts lightly, but the truth is in some of those school districts, they'll simply raise taxes. I'm not saying that's good.
But right now, Jake, they're debating a bill that will take that away.
I understand that. I have a report coming up on that. It gets a little complicated. This is my point. What's really horrendous about this, they're cutting absolute critical funds for the very needy in our society, the very at risk. Some of them people, literally, I know you, people are going to say, oh, Rick and Jake, you're over exaggerating. But some of the people in these programs might die without those programs.
Well, it's like those folks that we met in the wheelchair.
It's that critical.
It's like the woman we had here on the program. She said, you know, if I'm going to die, I'm going to do it in public. If they're going to cut the funding and destroy the program that's keeping me alive.
And it's the same old story, Rick. They don't have, how many lobbyists up in the Hill do they have other than their union? How many lobbyists are lobbying for these unfortunates in our society? Very few.
And I'm waiting, you know, and I keep going, when are we going to take to the streets? How bad is it going to get? And, you know, I'm looking at this budget, and I spent a bunch of time today thinking about it. Who's it going to harm? Who are the people that will be harmed by it? And who are the people who are going to do all right with it? And I think the Republicans have read the tea leaves. I think they've done the calculus that, you know what, those people that are going to be harmed by it weren't going to vote for us anyway. And they know that. And they're not going to get out the vote, and they're not going to remember, and they're not going to go to the polls, and they're not. That's what they're planning on. They're planning on You know, the parents just go, well, there's 40 kids in my kid's class this year, or there's 30 or 45 kids in the class this year. Well, it's just how it is. Times are tough. They're planning on that. Instead of going, you know what, those massive cuts at the state level forced 45 kids into my kid's class, and now my child doesn't get the personalized attention that he or she's going to need. And then, you know, people who need in-home assistance so that they can stay out of nursing homes, folks who need a helping hand, are not going to get it. And they're probably not going to vote either. That's part of the calculus. That's part of this whole thing. And they're hoping that you don't care and you're not going to remember. They're hoping for that amnesia to come back. They're hoping for that apathy to remain. You know, at the end of this, you know, and I've thought about this, Jake, are the cuts really going to harm me personally that much? Me personally, probably not right at this point in my life. Probably not that much. My kids may be in classes that are a little larger. But you know what? I've got the resources that if they need a little extra tutoring, I can afford that personally.
Well,
I don't know how many of the average families, I don't know how many people, you know, who are struggling to make it now are going to, I don't know how they're going to do.
Well, it sets in stage the long-range plans of the conservatives. This is just step one. They have every intention of taking the next step and the next step and the next step.
And the next step is completely destroy and privatize everything. And, you know, this is no surprise. It's going on around the globe. And you look at today in the UK, hundreds of thousands of teachers and public sector workers took the day off and went into the streets. Why? They don't want pension changes. They don't want the recovery. They don't want the cleanup done off of their back. They understand. Like I hope we understand, this entire scenario, all this suffering that's going on, because we let the greedy get even greedier, because we allowed Wall Street to gamble without any oversight, and they have crashed the economy. Not you, not your family, not spending on a social program, not spending on making sure granny gets medicine or our kid gets a lunch. I mean, stop and think of the argument that the Republicans are making. There's all this waste, fraud, and abuse out there from food stamps. Yes, there's Paul Ryan today said there's all this fraud in food stamps. Those they're feeding those kids. You know what? Maybe there is a little bit of fraud. Maybe there's a little bit, a small percentage. And you find those. You hear about those cases because we catch them. How come we don't hear about CEOs going to prison? How come we don't hear about the malfeasance in the boardrooms? How come we don't hear about the theft and the insider trading that is going on every single day? Well, because we want to make sure that we keep those people down. So what's it going to take? What's it going to take to wake us up? What's it going to take to get us out in the streets? With this budget? Will privatizing education, will the vouchers be it? Because in the fall, the vouchers are coming up. And they're going to go after collective bargaining here in the state. It's going to happen. We're going to be like Ohio. We're going to be like Wisconsin. We're going to be like the rest of them. They're coming for it. They completely have the ability. So what do you do? Now, I'm telling you now. Mark your calendars. This fall, the attacks will come fast and furious. You have to be ready for it. You have to be prepared for it. They want to destroy our way of life and take us back to the good old days, the good old 1890s, where you had a handful of overlords, the big robber barons, the railroad magnates, and the steel barons, and then you had everybody else fighting and scratching and beating each other for a pittance. Go back and read about the labor strikes. Go back and read about the company hired thugs. Figure out where we came from. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with a worker from Scotland, Hamish Drummond. He was out in the strikes today. He was out in the protests. We're right back after this.
Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
With the PSECU Home Equity Line of Credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing Life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
To this battle, take my union gun. Gonna end this world of slavery, for this war is one you're bound to lose. You fascists, goodbye.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So today, hundreds of thousands of teachers, public sector workers across Britain walked off the job, standing together in protest to what their government's trying to do, changing their pension plans. And it's been reported that this could begin a massive wave of direct public action, more protests, maybe a general strike, that kind of stuff. Things I think we need to start looking at here in our backyard. I've got Hamish Drummond on the phone. He's one of those workers who took to the streets today to protest. Hamish, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's a great pleasure, Rick.
Why today? Why did you go out in the streets today? Tell me.
Well, basically, I'm a representative in the Public and Commercial Services Union over here, which represents 250,000 members of our civil service. That's the central government for the United Kingdom. And along with members of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers, the University and Colleges Union, and the National Union of Teachers. Some 600,000 of us between those day in defense of our jobs, our pay, and as you say, of our pension plans. They are trying to impose changes to those pensions, which would mean that people have to work longer, going from a current default retirement age of 60, they're looking to increase to 68, and pay more, up to 3.2% or more. And finally, they're wanting us to receive less pension in retirement.
That sounds like exactly what they're trying to do here in states across the U.S., because, you know, the same attacks. But the reality is, and I'm not sure, I don't know how things are there, but here Wall Street basically collapsed our economy, sent us into a tailspin, stole massive amounts of wealth from the working class. They've been able to walk away unscathed, And now they want to balance the books on the backs of teachers and public sector workers, trash collectors. And I guess from what you're saying, they're doing the same thing with you.
It's exactly the same story. Over here, it was the City of London where our banks are based. But billions of pounds paid out in bailouts to the banks here. And one of the messages that really resonated here, their bailout, simply put, we're not getting one. We are being asked to pick up the tab.
Yeah, I mean, here we're talking about shared sacrifice. So all our politicians here in the U.S. keep saying we need to have shared sacrifice. And the way I'm taking it is, you working people, you need to pick up the tab. And the folks who we've given billions and trillions in dollars of handouts to in the very, very top of our economic ladder, they don't really need to sacrifice.
Here, the tagline our politicians are using, the Conservative Party and their collaborators in the Liberal Democrats, who prior to the election positioned themselves as a soft left alternative. Now they've gone into a coalition with the right-wing Conservatives. Here, their tagline is, we are all in this together.
Yeah.
But the cabinet, the government cabinet, it contains 16 millionaires. They've got nothing in common with the likes of you or I, and very much they're expecting working people to pick up the tab.
That's an excellent point, Hamish, because, you know, in our Congress, the 435 people in the House, the vast majority of them are millionaires. In the Senate, I think all but one or two are millionaires. So it's an excellent point that you bring up. They're not sacrificing any. I don't see them having to miss a meal. I don't see their kids having to go without shoes. Not seeing that, but I am seeing working people across this country, and I'm sure in yours, having to pull back and really sacrifice and struggle.
Oh, we've got a great example of just the hardship that these millionaires face. One of the government ministers pulled his staff together and told them they were going to face a 50% cull of jobs. One in two jobs would be going in that department. But to illustrate how he was in this together with them, he told them he was going to give up his chauffeur-driven car.
Oh, well, that's big of him. So that guy who had a job, he's now out on the street, too.
As you can imagine, that made everything all right, Rick.
But are you guys facing the same kind of rhetoric that we're getting here, which is basically to sell off all public assets, to privatize everything that is part of the commons, part of what is the public's domain? Are you guys seeing that privatization push?
If it's not nailed down, they would love to sell it. And that's one of the concerns, one of the reasons we're fighting so hard for our pensions, is that currently the cost of providing equivalent pensions to what we have in the event of privatization is one of the things that keeps the private sector from wanting to take on our work. If they drastically reduce the cost of the pensions for the employer, because as you'll be well aware, pensions are deferred pay.
Right.
If they reduce that cost for the employer, then suddenly privatization becomes potentially much more lucrative and they don't have to worry about long-term costs so much. So that's a key reason why we've been taking action today.
And exactly what it is, and here in this country, we've got a bunch of teabaggers. I don't know if you've heard of our Tea Party people, but these tea twits, they love to say redistribution of wealth. You want to redistribute wealth? Well, what you've just said is a massive redistribution of wealth from the teachers and the public sector workers up to the employers and to the investor class.
Quite right, and that's entirely what we're seeing here. The rich get richer, and the poor can just shove it, basically, seems to be the approach of our government.
Yeah, it's scary, scary times. And hundreds of thousands of people in the streets today. What kind of a message do you think will be sent tomorrow? Because I know here in this country, the headlines, I'm sure, will be violent protests, and they will find a way to make this about union thugs and you know, as negative as they can spin it. I'm curious how your media is going to handle this.
Certainly, we're already seeing in the evening coverage attempts to play down the numbers. But I can tell you from first-hand experience, standing on the picket line from about 25 minutes past 6 this morning, my own workplace, there are 600 staff due to go in, and by midday there were only 66 across that picket line.
Wow.
We have fantastic support. What they're trying to do, anybody who is off sick, anybody who is booked on annual leave, they're going to take them away from the strike figures to try and undermine it. But we know from what we saw on the picket lines, on the streets at rallies and protests around the country, we know there's massive support because the British public are far more intelligent than the politicians give them credit for. And they know that this isn't about the very rich at the top of the heap. This is about defending those at the bottom.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, what's next? I mean, a successful day as far as I'm concerned, when you can get hundreds of thousands of people to put their boots in the street in solidarity with one another, I think that is a massive victory. But what's next?
Certainly. The negotiations that have been ongoing will continue, and we are hopeful that there will be a change in position from the government, that they will negotiate in better faith. But there is going to be an ongoing campaign. The rank and file members of other public sector unions that weren't taking action today were with us on our rallies, on our demonstrations, and they're calling on their leadership to not just offer verbal support for our action, but to actually be balloting them. There's a real swell of opinion across the public sector that the only way we are going to defeat this government is by standing together. And so come the autumn, obviously we've got the long academic summer holiday where industrial action, strike action has less effect. But come the autumn, there's a real groundswell of opinion in these other unions to be taking joined-up action, which could be more than 4 million taking strike action at the same time, and that would be absolutely massive in the context of UK industrial relations. In the context of global industrial relations, 4 million people taking action would be very significant. And it's action against government austerity cuts. It's action against attacks on working people's terms and conditions. And it's action that can win. We don't have a strong government. We do have a strong union movement. And if we use that strength, we can win, Rick.
You know, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm going, boy, I wish we could import that here and wake some folks up, because all of the attacks that are happening to you are happening here. It's just that our complacent media, they're just not covering it. And I don't know that people want to hear it, but we're going to face a lot of the same austerity cuts that you guys are going at, that are happening to you. We're facing the same privatization schemes that are happening. I'm just hoping that by hearing your voice and hearing the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are taking direct action, that it plants the seed in some folks' heads.
Indeed, indeed. And just don't beat yourself up. I mean, bear in mind that what was happening in Wisconsin, the struggles that you've had over there and the strength that working people have shown together, that provides inspiration. We know your culture is a bit different. We know the right's a bit stronger and dominates the media. But we've seen through citizen journalism, through YouTube, through everything that's happening online, we get to see that, and we support you and your struggles as you support us and ours.
Absolutely. It took us 14 hours, but we were in Wisconsin for a good portion of that. And, you know, again, it was history in the making, and it really shows what direct action can do. Hamish Drummond, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great fight over there, and we'd love to talk to you as this moves down the road.
Indeed. It's been a pleasure, Rick. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Winning.
name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My cases are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Well, you know, the right wing is basically losing their mind. The NLRB has actually stood up and said, you know what, we're going to actually do our jobs. Kind of amazing, you know, after 8 years of Bush, the American people are kind of taken by surprise that the NLRB is going to actually do their job. Instead of it being an arm of corporate America, it's actually looking at the law and applying the law fairly and equally across the spectrum. You look at the Boeing thing. The Boeing thing is blown out of proportion by the right because they're used to being able to go wherever they want, retaliate against their workers. They're used to it. So when the NLRB says, wait a second, you really should not have been so stupid as to come out and say, well, you know, we can't have a strike every couple of years, so we're moving this plant. To me, that sounds like retaliation for someone standing up for their rights. So the NLRB has pursued that. And what they've also done is they've come out with a new rule that says, you know what, we need to take a look at how workplace elections for union representation is conducted. Common sense, very common sense rules, very common sense. And Pennsylvania Congressman Chaka Fetteh, he has put out a press release on the new rule proposal by the NLRB for representation in the workplace. He says, quote, with the economy in recovery, we must continue to focus on rebuilding the middle class and upholding the rights of America's workers as we strive to win the future. The NLRB has proposed a common sense rule for workers' representation elections that will help us accomplish our goal with a labor force that is efficient, productive, and treated fairly. He says all too often, American workplaces are stressed and nearly paralyzed as employers seek to delay and control an election process that's guaranteed under our laws. The NLRB's proposed rules will streamline these elections to ensure a fair and timely vote that in turn will allow both worker and management to get back to business. By taking advantage of modern technology, the new procedures would drastically improve transparency in representation cases. The NLRB rule can eliminate redundancies and inefficiencies while scaling back on litigation that can rob employers and employees of time, money, and energy. Look, what's good for the American worker is good for American business, he says. And he says he wholeheartedly supports these things. And I look at the Kentucky River Medical Center in Jackson, Kentucky, as a perfect example of what's wrong with the current election system and the current direction that we've been going. 13 years. These workers have been fighting for a first contract. A first contract, 13 years. You're not going to tell me we've got a problem? The company's fired workers. The company has done everything that they can do, everything possible to stall and delay and obstruct and roadblock. They've done it all. Another example of why we need major labor law reform. And you look at the situation that's going on locally, up north a little bit, the Pocono Medical Center. And we've been covering this for the last couple of, for the last several months. Now, as they fight for another contract, a fair contract, you've got this big corporation who's decided, you know what we're going to do? We're going to fire somebody. We're going to pick somebody out, we're going to fire. And we're going to hold off, we're going to stall, we're going to delay, we're going to do all of the things that corporate America has been doing to workers for a generation now. And I look at this firing. I mean, this woman, a 7-year dedicated employee, mother of three, someone who, a pillar of the community. She's talking about issues on the job, and they fire her. Why? Well, obviously, why? They want to scare the heck out of everybody else. They want to say, see, look what happened to her. You could be next. And the idea is to put the fear of God into them. So they say, I need a job. The economy's bad. I don't want to stand up. No. What it's actually done in this case is it's brought those people together because they have been fighting for so long. And you stop and you look at, this company is willing to fire people. They're willing to illegally, allegedly they've been following people. Unlawful surveillance of their employees. They've been interfering with the employees talking about workplace issues, meeting with their union representation, even on their own time. And you look at this, is this how we do things in this country? Is this a free country where you have a company that does some of these things? At the end of it, what it says to me is we need major labor law reform. And I go back to, when President Obama took office, we needed the Employee Free Choice Act. We need a strike replacement bill. We need something with teeth. Because even after you get these people who've been fired their jobs back, there are no real penalties. You know, if you get fired tomorrow and you go get another job, to try and tide you over until you get your job back, all that money that you made, they deduct. The penalty is nothing. The gain is enormous. The gain is enormous because they can throw one of these elections. And the folks that are looking around going, times are tough. So what we're seeing is massive opportunism. They know the economy's bad. They know those workers are just happy to have a job and they can't afford to lose it. So they play these games. They do this kind of stuff. Because they can. Because the law allows it. The law allows it. And the NLRB, while, now they're administering the law fairly, they really don't have the teeth that I think they should have. They really don't. And this is where people in the street, this is where the rally we went to a couple of months ago, 5,000 people in the street demonstrating, supporting those workers at Pocono Medical Center. That kind of show of support is so important. And I look at this and my heart is with those folks, but with all workers. At the end of this, the rules are set up against you. Look at that Kentucky River thing. 13 years. There was a company we talked about the other night, I'm not going to say 25 years. 25 years it took to get a first contract. Is that how we do things here? Evidently so. It's frustrating and it's angering, Jake, because, you look at this and, we had the opportunity. And you look at what the Republicans are doing here in the state of Pennsylvania. They're just railroading their entire agenda through. The Democrats, had the opportunity to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Did not happen. So when I look at someone like Shaka Fatah saying, I support these new rule changes, they go, well, why didn't you go out there and fight to push the Employee Free Choice Act out there?
Employee Free Choice Act is needed, but obviously labor law reform. And the reason the Republicans And the business community are so angry is because, let's be honest, in the Bush administration, the NLRB was pretty inept.
They were perfectly apt.
They
were good.
I mean,
sided against workers.
I know that.
They were the arm
That's
of the
why
businesses.
A lot of internationals didn't even bother going through the NLRB. I mean, it was staff, Bush appointed former corporate executives. And what kind of a fair shake do workers expect to get?
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, you know, as we move down the road, and this is why next year's election is so important, why 2012 is so important. And, you know, I've been talking about the reasons that I'm voting for President Obama, because the Republicans haven't put anybody out that I think would represent me. The NLRB is one of those situations where you go, you know, I'm okay with what he's done. They're actually doing the job that they're supposed to be doing, administering the law. The other thing is the Supreme Court. You know, I don't know if you've been noticing the decisions coming out of the court lately, but a decidedly pro-business slant. Something like three-quarters of all decisions, upwards of 80% of all decisions, going in favor of the corporate masters. It can't be that high. I mean, it's one of those things. What we're seeing now, though, is you got the second quarter fundraising numbers coming up. The deadline is tonight at midnight, so they're all out there raising money, trying to meet the deadline. So it'll be interesting tomorrow to see what the fundraising numbers are going to be. If Michelle Bachmann actually once again, you know, takes that top slot, Romney needs to raise some money, because if you remember the first quarter. Bachmann raised about $2.2 million. Romney raised about $1.9 million. And then the rest of them, you know, pennies here and there, with Gingrich basically broke. His staff basically.
His wife has all his money.
Well, jewelry, evidently. you know, you got to look at, you go, really, honey? You got, about $1 million worth of jewelry?
Actually, I think they found two accounts. One was for $500,000 and another one for $1 million. That's a lot of jewelry.
Which, again, you know, having been married a number of years, you go back and you go, you know, when I do something wrong, I usually come home with flowers, come home with something. Depending how big the crisis is, you know, maybe jewelry, because you got to kind of smooth it over. So you got to wonder what the nudie's,
I was going to say,
what nude's been doing.
Are you insinuating that the man sinned again?
I am not in.
I'm not saying anything,
but, you know, his own words, you know, sometimes he works too hard, sometimes he loves his country too much, and he has affairs. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's what he said, his words, not mine. I don't want to pay his jewelry bill.
Well, he has been working hard, and he professes to love his country, so.
So an affair must be around the corner.
You decide.
You know, he was walking down the street, tripped, and oops, sorry, Mrs. So-and-so. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that has to be one of the all-time great clips. If you're ever running against nude, all you have to do is get that out.
Well, I asked my wife. I said, you know, I do work very hard. You know, I work, you know, 13, 14 hours a day. We work hard here at the Rick Smith Show. And, you know, I do love my country. And I said, you know, you think every once in a while I might get away with it? And she said, yeah, you can do it, but you'll find all that junk, all that crap you've been saving in the garage. You'll be finding that out on the front porch, out in the street. You can come by and take it anytime. and she told me flat out, you won't get the good stuff. You'll get all that crap you've been saving. So I don't want to lose all my good stuff. I like the good stuff. But anyway, the quarterly numbers tonight, you know, they got about an hour and just over an hour yet to go out with their tin cups and their pencils and beg for spare change to try and get them over the hump, because I think the fundraising money's going to give them a bump moving down the road. If Bachmann does again what she did in the first quarter, again, you know, it's going to make her look more formidable. And, you know, she doesn't have the money that Romney's got. She can't reach into her pocket. But she does have an entire army of children that, you know, I wonder how many of those 23 kids that she was a foster parent to, how many of those are working on her campaign? And, you know, how many are working against her campaign? That would be something interesting to find out.
Oh, that's not nice.
That would be something interesting to find out. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk with Jeffrey Ernst Friedman about this whole Stephen Colbert thing. Kind of interesting. Right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
In Chicago Wednesday, the AFL-CIO announced a commitment to action to bring public and private partners together to promote investments in America's infrastructure. The goal is to work with a variety of partners to promote at least $10 billion in infrastructure investment over the next 5 years, as well as to provide training to 40,000 new apprentices and skills upgrades to 100,000 workers in green technologies and construction. The Incredible People's Movement in Ohio behind repealing SB 5 kicks into a new gear today. We Are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas says that a huge number of volunteers have collected way more than enough signatures to get the gutting of collective bargaining on the November ballot, so the people of Ohio can kill the attack on collective bargaining.
It's just really exciting. You know, we have over 10,000 volunteers on the ground that have been collecting signatures, which is unprecedented in Ohio history. After June 30th, then we really turn into campaign mode, and we have to make sure that everyone that's been involved stays involved, and we continue talking to our friends and family, and that we make sure that they turn out in November so we can repeal Senate Bill 5.
Hundreds of economists are calling on Congress to raise the national debt ceiling, Jesse Russell reports.
A letter signed by 235 economists and five Nobel laureates has been delivered to Congress calling for a swift movement on reaching a deal regarding raising the debt limit. During a conference call on Wednesday, Nobel Prize-winning economist Robert Saulow explained that if the debt ceiling isn't raised, the money used to pay interest will need to come from somewhere.
If the interest is to be paid to pacify the foreign holders of Treasury debt, then other obligations of the federal government, salaries or whatever, will not be paid. Or bills from defense contractors will not be paid.
Former Council of Economic Advisers Chairman Alan Blinder said the debt ceiling needs to go up to finance this year's budget. That's a decision Congress has already made.
Failure to raise the debt ceiling at this point would be declaring, though, essentially declaring those decisions illegal, null and void, whatever, not enabling them to be carried out.
President Barack Obama had strong words for Congress on Wednesday. He criticized Congress for taking time off for vacations while such an important issue was left hanging in the balance. Obama said he's willing to make $1 trillion in cuts if Republicans compromise and eliminate tax breaks for millionaires and oil companies.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. There's a million-dollar man. Always, it's his way.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Well, Stephen Colbert today got his permission. The Federal Election Commission gave him permission to set up his super PAC. The only question is, what happens now? Folks over at Public Citizen are concerned that this is going to carve out a gaping loophole in campaign finance laws. I'm kind of figuring out this myself. That's why I've asked Jeffrey Ernst Friedman, research director at maplight.org, come talk to us a little bit about this. Jeffrey, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Explain this. Colbert is now going to set up his own PAC. How's this going to work out?
I think the issue surrounding Colbert is association with Viacom by the nature of him you know, being a comedian on a TV show, he kind of has these, you know, kind of a production studio at his disposal, and I think that's largely what came into issue here. And so what we're seeing with this is that he has he received a limited exception in where if he's producing, he can produce commercial and content regarding the Super PAC specifically to his television show, but anytime it steps outside of that on another channel or another show, then you'll start to see disclosure requirements come into it. So it's, on one hand, it's very limited, you know, as a comedian kind of with a very limited agenda. You know, it changes quite differently when it becomes a, you know, an individual with a more, you know, explicit outcome that they're looking for. So I think that's where the concern is.
So he could be legally walking a pretty thin rope here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that was kind of the issue, and you'll kind of notice that his tact with the FEC was much different than his tact with the congressional hearings where he was involved earlier, and I think he kind of realized that he was definitely going into some real, you know, some real...
real murky waters.
Exactly.
You know, when I look at this, though, and I guess the first question I have is, and I'm sure you can't answer this, but why would the FEC give him this kind of permission? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, given what you've laid out, the fact that the parent company Viacom could be part of this.
Yeah, I think it's typically there's a media exemption that is done where, you know, newspapers are allowed to do editorials and kind of support and oppose specific lawmakers or politicians, and I think that's kind of the precedent that they were based upon, and I think it was the explicit line that they were drawing. When it's in his own show is one thing, and when it steps outside of that is another, and I think that's probably their motivation. But that's my opinion looking at the data. It just comes out today. You know, we'll see how, as it develops.
It'll be interesting to see how much money he raises.
Mm. Exactly. I think that's the interesting thing. He has a pretty big star power. You know, it's like, you know, when was the last time the FEC received this much attention he brings to it? And I think a lot of people are, you know, interested you know, seeing what he has to do and what he does with it. And, you know, it's kind of, you think he has good intentions, and he most likely does. He has not a politician. You know, although he did try to run for president, you know, it's not really his main thing. So I think we'll see what kind of money, and then, like he said, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do with it until he gets it.
Until he actually does it. So the question I guess I have then is, are we making a mockery of our electoral system even more than it's already become?
I think that's the interesting, you know, the kind of legal approach to things. You kind of expand and try to see what can and can't be done. And I think, you know, if you listen to his commentary and kind of read between the lines, I think he's trying to bring the attention to that. It is kind of it's a curious system. You know, at MapLight, we think that, you know, this system is kind of broken, and that, you know, special interests, you know, those with money get to drown out opinions and kind of push things in their specific direction. And I think hopefully he's bringing attention to it, not further burying it down.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you look at the decisions of the Supreme Court have really just kind of thrown our whole electoral system into chaos. The Citizens United thing, the most recent one in Arizona, all of these decisions just not helping. And what bothers me is the money that's perverting the system on both sides of the aisle. You know, I saw a statistic recently that Republicans get 79% of their money from big corporations, but Democrats get 72% of their money from the same folks.
Yeah, I think everyone likes to believe that it's the other side is doing wrong and their side does right. And I think it's, you know, just with the numbers you're showing, is like both sides are definitely in the pockets of these, you know, organizations trying to get money. And, you know, it's like, it's really the organizations have the money, so the lawmakers go to them and say, what can I do to keep that money going? I think that's what's kind of a lot of people think it's just the money being pushed into their pockets, and they're asking for it. I think the system is set up that way, and that's kind of problematic.
I mean, when you look at it in that way, 79% of the money goes to Republicans, 72% to Democrats out of the same corporate pockets. It's no wonder that the corporate the corporate form is served, that their policies, the things that benefit them are front and foremost.
Exactly. You know, it's definitely I think it's the system, and that's kind of our stories are to show it's, you know, it's not specific lawmakers, and it's not specific companies that are, you know, doing evil. prison system hopefully will be allowed to change and kind of Citizens United and the case in Arizona that you're speaking about doesn't really bode well for that future.
Because at the end of the day, for me, and I'm not sure where you guys at MapLight are on this, but at some point there's got to be a reining in of this corporate money. I'm a fan of publicly financed elections. You know, I'm a fan of undoing some of the crazy things that Citizens United did and allowing, you know, individuals, companies, whatever, to, through the back door with no accountability, spend a whole bunch of money. Here in this state, it was a lot of attack ads from who knows who it was. But that's what bothers me.
Yeah, it's, you know, MapLight is a nonpartisan organization that we track influence, and I think money is the easiest way, to do that. Definitely because the disclosure allows that to happen. But with, again, the examples you're talking about where the money gets, you know, hidden, you don't know who is behind a particular, attack ad or a candidate, you know, it's like, who are they really representing? Is it their constituents that voted them in, or is it the money that they're receiving that kind of got them there? And I think that's the scary thing.
You know, I think the interesting part of this, you know, I think you guys did some, a markup of the airline, the airline industry.
Go ahead.
Where you basically laid out what I had said earlier, that the money's on both sides of the aisle. So as we're moving down this whole discussion on the debt ceiling, you know, what should we be watching out? What should we be seeing there?
Yeah, I think the debt ceiling is an issue because it's where is this money going to come from? There's only two options. It's either increase revenues or decrease outlays, and I think pretty much decided which side is on which, you know, politically for that one. I think it's going to be how much money is going to be cut. And, you know, the White House is trying to make the argument about, you know, we should be talking about which organizations or which industries are going to, you know, be feeling the pain or sharing the pain as the language goes. And I think that's what you'll see is each individual is going to start protecting their particular backer and their particular industry, and we were able to look at money from the connected to corporate jets, you know, manufacturers, airports, and things. Fortunately, we were able to leverage, you know, data from Open Secrets, you know, using the industry money, and we were looking at those, and it, you know, like you said, it's a fairly split evenly between the parties of these contributions, and when will we see, you know, the belief of, you know, the tax breaks that may or may not happen, either who's advocating for whom, and that's what we try to track.
Yeah, who had the best paycheck at the lobbyist meeting? You know, and I look at this and I go, you know, why can't we see in real time? I mean, if we were going to have real transparency, it would be nice to be able to, you know, maybe put counters on their back and, you know, maybe, you know, a ticker tape on there to make sure that, you know, you can see where the money's coming from and who's getting what from who.
Yeah, MapLight was able to, we produced a widget with Wired.com, you know, Wired magazine, and they were, essentially, it has a silhouette of the lawmakers with corporate logos, kind of mirroring a NASCAR look to try to just really highlight that it's, you know, they're really these, they should be required exactly to have, like, corporate, you know, or union or whatever organizations that are funding them, you know, say, you know, when they're speaking on behalf of an industry, to highlight that they're receiving $10,000 from this industry, and maybe that explains why they have the particular opinion they do. And I think the only thing that prevents us from knowing that in real time is disclosure laws, which are, you know, created by Congress. So there's your limitation.
And a lot of this stuff. I mean, to me, the whole financial reporting, all of that stuff should be, we've got this great technology. We shouldn't have to wait quarters down the road. You know, we shouldn't have to wait. But anyway, this Colbert thing, is this a big deal to you?
I think it's interesting to what happens is how are people going to take this carve out and then make it explicit to them. And I think anytime there's, you know, a little exemption that allows less transparency, I think is not a good thing. I think, you know, if an organization doesn't feel that it's good PR to back a particular group, you know, maybe they shouldn't be. I think that's what's scary is it's really the unknown, and I think that's Colbert was quoted saying, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not going to know what I do with this until I get it.
Yeah, until I start. Do you see others doing this? I mean, do you see the Glenn Becks of the world, the Limbaughs? Do you see people like that doing this, or is this just political shtick?
I think eventually someone, an organization will find out a way to use this loophole for themselves. There was a ruling last week with the FEC, you know, about these super PACs and whether lawmakers can raise money for them. And they said they couldn't raise money directly or they had the same limitations, but they could appear at an event where there was unlimited money. So, you know, how is that any different than a fundraiser if you say, you know, you have these high profile lawmakers there and individuals want, you know, to get their ear for a couple minutes and they can spend to show up. I think that's, you know, it's the, you know, the carve outs that allow things to happen. So I think it's, you know, it's definitely something that needs to be watched and people need to be vigilant and call it out when they feel that it's wrong.
Yeah, well, I think it's wrong from the beginning. While I like Colbert, I think he's funny. I just think this is a perversion of the system and it's making a mockery of it. That simple. Jeffrey Friedman, I appreciate the time. Research director over at maplight.org.
Thanks
so much
for having us.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
If your job paid $50,000 a year and you stayed at it for 47 years, your total tally for a lifetime of work would be $2.4 million. Not bad, but hedge fund hustler John Paulson pulled down that much last year. Most of us would consider an annual income of $2.4 million to be a windfall. But it didn't take Paulson a full 12 months of work to pocket his windfall, or 1 month, a week, or even a day. That's how much he made an hour. Yes, Paulson could have worked one single hour in 2010 and hauled off a paycheck equal to what a typical household gets for a lifetime of work. Now, guess who gets the lower tax rate? The $50,000 a year family, or the $2.4 million an hour Wall Street man? Right. Thanks to a loophole big enough to drive an armored truck through, billionaire hedge fund dealers like Paulson escape the usual 35% tax rate, instead paying, at most, 15%. That's more than wrong. It's immoral. In Washington, Wall Street-backed Congress critters are working fervently to kill Medicare and defund everything from education to environmental protection, all on the grounds that the only way to cope with a growing federal deficit is to bulldoze programs that Americans count on. But look behind that lush hedge over there, and what'll you find? The 25 biggest hedge fund dealers who took $22 billion in pay last year. If just these 25 guys were taxed at the 35% rate, Congress would have an additional $4 billion this year to use for filling the deficit hole, rather than gleefully throwing six seniors into it. This is Jim Hightower saying, since 1995, the total income of the 400 richest Americans has nearly quadrupled, yet the real tax rate they pay has been cut almost in half. America isn't broke. It's being gamed by super-rich tax dodgers. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Massachusetts, their state house was looking at a package of ethics reform bills. And one of the things that they came up with is, why don't we have our lobbyists wear identification badges? You know, just a little badge they wear, you know, pinned to their whatever. Wear it on a little chain, little clip, whatever. because they've got some corruption problems up there themselves. In fact, their former Speaker of the House, Salvatore Demasi, he has been the third consecutive Speaker of the House to be convicted or plead guilty of felony charges. He was found guilty of seven counts of federal corruption earlier in the month. He's probably going to do 20 years behind bars. That's what he's facing. But they're debating this this change, which to me seems pretty reasonable. You know, you got somebody walking around who, you know, they should have a badge, yeah, maybe. If they work there, why not? But the head of the House Rules Committee, a Democrat named John Bonetta, he says he finds the reforms revolting. In fact, he said the idea of a badge by lobbyists to me is, I kind of find it revolting. Hitler, during the concentration camps, tattooed all the Jewish people so he would know who was Jew and who wasn't. And that's something that I just can't go along with. He goes, I know who the lobbyists are when I go out there. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, really? This is worth, this is kind of worth losing your career over? Because you know it's going to be a political thing the next time you run for office. You know the Anti-Defamation League is going to pop their heads up and go, hey, wait a minute. What are you talking about? And that's what happened. So he has apologized. And you know, I really hate these guys with their apologies. You said it, so yeah, I'm willing to take the beating that I deserve. But here's the thing. I mean, is it that outrageous that we ask for, you know, tell you who you are? I don't know. You know, when I go into the Capitol, you know, I have a press pass. I have my name on it. When I'm there in an official capacity, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. And there's part of me that says, you know what? You don't need to know who the hell I am. And you look at what's going on with the TSA, and we've been talking about the airports for some time. Do we really need to have policies patting people down? Do we really need to have them going through the porno scanners, or are metal detectors enough? There's part of me that says we need to just grow up, say, you know what? Sometimes in life there's danger. Sometimes bad things happen. And this whole TSA thing, what's going on? And look, you know, they're changing their pat down procedures because they're not going to do kids anymore. And then they got into trouble because, oh, well, somebody said that they checked inside a 95-year-old woman's underwear. And they say, no, we didn't look in her underwear. I wouldn't look in her underwear either. Sorry, I'm just not doing that. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. I don't want to know what bombs Granny's got in her drawers. I just don't. Because I know they're not the kind that go boom. They're the kind that go, oh, honey. Because if I live to be 95, I'm telling you, my drawers will be full too. But here's the thing. We've now made two exemptions. We're not going to check children, and we're not going to check Granny. So the terrorists have won because they're going to fill our children with bombs, and they're going to fill Granny's Depends with bombs. And I don't think so, but, you know, the reality is now we've made these exemptions. And then what more are you going to back away from? Look, there's two ways of looking at this. Me personally, I say the metal detector's enough. On a plane in this day and age, trust me, 19 thugs with box cutters ain't going to cut it. It's not going to happen again. Somebody stands up and says, I got a knife, I'm taking over the plane. He's dead. People will beat him to death. So those days are done. There will be no more complacent hijackings. Not going to happen. And the hijackers know this. The people know that they're not going to do it again. They're going to find some other way. So stop harassing us at the airports. Do away with all of that. Have people paying attention. Have people, you know, when they go through the metal detectors, that's fine. But this nonsense, I mean, this is really getting ridiculous. And now here's the thing. When we do away with it, if something does happen, don't turn around and say to TSA, you didn't do your job. They wanted to strip search you. I mean, there's two ways of thinking of this again. I can keep you completely safe. I can. But who's going to keep you safe from me? I would have everyone fly naked, and before you got on the plane, cavity searches. You're safe. Be happy with it. Don't you think, Jake? I mean, you know, at the end of this, you go, grow up. Bad stuff happens.
I tend to think you're pretty right on that.
But again, you know, if the TSA says, okay, well, we're gonna stop all of this stuff, and somebody sneaks something through, you know, all of these yuppies and all of these nitwits who stand at the thing, hey, touch my yaya, she touched my yaya. Nobody's ever touched me like that. Well, maybe somebody should, honey. Yeah, I just, have you seen some of these videos of these people who stage this stuff? And they go in there with their children and they stage this stuff so they can videotape it and try and sue. That's what it's about. This feigned outrage. Oh, she touched my so-and-so. Well, you know what? Come, grow up. So don't fly. You know, and here's the thing. I mean, I would think you'd have a lot of people at the airport who don't, you know, who are kind of lonely, kind of need somebody to touch them. You have a whole line of people. I'll go next. Strip search me. I'm surprised that you don't have that. I mean, there's some lonely people out there, and you know what? Every once in a while, everyone needs a little contact. Can you imagine that? Guy going, well, you know, don't stop. Do that about 100 more times. Just do it really fast. There you go. There you go again, giving me that breath.
I think most people really understand that, you know, we live in a dangerous world. And they have the option of not flying. I think that pretty much says it all.
At the end of this, I still like my idea, which is you get that roll of paper, put it on the back of the seat like at the doctor's office. You just roll it down the seat. You sit your naked behind right there. And, you know, someone said, I wouldn't want to see you naked. Don't look. In fact, if all of us are on the plane together, we're all looking at the good-looking woman in the front row.
Yeah, but if they do look at you, they have barf bags. You know what I mean?
You know, what happened to the beautiful, the body of beautiful? No, I mean, really, I mean, I just saw something the other day. It was talking about topless beaches. And it asked the question. I mean, they actually did a survey of U.S. travelers. And they released it today. 78% of respondents said they think toplessness is okay. You know, when they go to the beach, they're okay with people going around with no top on. When they go to the pool, they're okay. 85% of the people surveyed. I'm happy with it. You know, I got to be honest. I'm okay. I'm okay with, you know, with women walking around topless. I walk around topless all the time. Nobody says anything about that. And truth of the matter is, never mind. We're not going there. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Should we fly naked? I think that's the way to go. No more worries about, oh, they porno scanned me. No more worries of cancer from the scanners, because now they're saying, well, you know, it could cause cancer if you go enough. You know, if you're the pilot, you're the stewardess, you're one of those people who work there, how many times you got to go back and forth through that? We got to grow up in this country. Sometimes, you know what? Bad stuff happens. Sometimes I'm going to get on the plane and it might not land. That's just the reality of life. Take a chance. Every once in a while, you know what? Life's a risk. And flying is no different. You know, I drive my car nuts. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, back after this.
Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? The
That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service. 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and across the country, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Big news with Secretary Geithner.
Yes, it seems to be, and I'm not sure that this was necessarily the day that the Treasury Secretary wanted this to get out, but it seems that he would like to leave his job this autumn. If economic conditions are stronger, and if the debt ceiling debate gets resolved in a timely manner, according to an administration official who is senior, unnamed.
Do we have any possible replacements?
We do. Yes. Erskine Bowles, White House Chief of Staff under President Bill Clinton.
Oh boy.
Roger Altman, who's a prominent investment banker, former Deputy Treasury Secretary. Jamie Dimon, who's chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase. He's considered a strong dark horse. Now, he said he's not interested, but many on Wall Street think he'd say yes if asked by Obama. But White House has to think somebody who leads the most successful bank in the U.S. is too closely aligned with Wall Street, judging by your chuckle. Do you think he is?
Well, I mean... Let's just pardon Bernie Madoff and put him in charge.
Right. Also, William Daley also comes from J.P. Morgan, and he's the chief of staff. Also, FDIC chair Sheila Bair, who's outgoing. She's popular. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who needs the money. He needs a job. And that was a joke.
Yes,
and
I know.
General Electric CEO Jeff Immelt.
Oh, there's a perfect one. That's my guy right there. He can just outsource the rest of the jobs. Beautiful. There we go.
Now, he said today that he plans to remain at Treasury for the foreseeable future. But you could reasonably say that the foreseeable future on June the 30th is the next 3 months.
Right.
Now, he's been very closely involved in the negotiations to cut the deficit by trillions. He's played key behind-the-scenes role. He sits in on the talks with Biden during those negotiations. He was also the chief administration spokesman on the need to reach an agreement by August the 2nd. So he's been very strong on that. But he has been very clear about his desire to step down.
He's been in a tough role for a while. I mean, I wouldn't want the job. I don't know how he doesn't have ulcers.
I know. And he's been there for quite a long time. But he has done some things that are considered to be quite successful. For example, the auto industry bailouts, regarded as successful government interventions in the private sector. They turned them around. The controversial TARP Wall Street bailout program, that may wind out turning a small profit for taxpayers. Also, he speaks Chinese, by the way. I didn't know this. He's urged the Chinese government to allow its currency to appreciate in value, which apparently is a critical element in reducing the U.S. trade deficit.
It's a huge issue. If their money's worth, consider 40% is the estimate that I've seen. Their money is worth 40% less than ours. It makes their products much cheap, 40% cheaper on our market.
Right.
So, of course, we're going to get our behinds kicked. And for me, our trade deficit is the number one deficit. And we hear nobody talking about that.
Right. Well, he's been pivotal in urging the Chinese to allow its currency to appreciate in value.
Well, I got to tell you, I wish the Republicans would dig their heels in as they have on this debt ceiling on the trade deficit. But they won't do that because that means the people who fill their pockets would be very unhappy. Anyway, more news from Washington. Let's talk about the debt limit. What's going on here?
Oh, yes, the debt limit. Well, my goodness me. Fascinating developments on the debt limit. Of course, it does depend who you're talking to. But according to a senior Senate Democratic aide, told Reuters, but it does seem very reliable, there have been talks in which Democrats are weighing a short-term debt limit increase, something that was not on the cards until pretty recently, and it will cover the country's borrowing needs for about 7 months and be about $1 trillion in budget savings to attract Republican support. But will it attract Republican support? Well, Mitch McConnell, Senate Minority Leader, Republican, floated a similar idea fairly recently, but House Majority Leader Eric Cantor shot it down, said he wasn't interested in the idea.
And that whole staged walkout.
Yeah, the walkout. Yeah, that set this whole thing off this week.
Interesting. And Senator Merkley?
Oh, this is great. This was one of the for sheer theater today. Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon went after Senator Mitch McConnell, challenged Republicans to defend tax breaks. They're going after corporate jets, yachts, and racehorses. So they're going after the racehorse tax break. They're calling the bluegrass boondoggle in a slap at McConnell, whose home state of Kentucky is, of course, famous for horse racing. Yeah. Quote, giving triple crown treatment to millionaires while workers are put out to pasture, that's not right. And it's not the American way, Merkley said, referring to Thoroughbred Racing's Triple Crown series of races.
You got to love when they get a little class worry.
Yeah, they get between $250 and $300 million in breaks.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Just for horses running around in a circle.
Yes.
My wife would be really unhappy if she heard that. Big horse fan. So this whole debt thing going to take us through the summer, or what's going on? The senators going home, taking a break? What's the deal?
No, well, they all thought they were taking a break, and then Harry Reid said, no, 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 no. We're not going to take a break. We're going to be responsible. It is often said that with liberty comes responsibility, and we're all staying. And I just had this wonderful visual of all the rank and file lining up with their buckets and spades and their, you know, and their overnights, and suddenly getting told to turn around and go back to Senate. They get to go home for Independence Day, but then they have to come back on Tuesday. Barbara Mikulski from Maryland, who's quite feisty, said sarcastically, this was before she knew what was going to happen, I just thought, how awful that I have to go to Maryland, be in parades, go over to the Eastern Shore, have lunch at Old Salty's with my seafood. Oh, my God, who would want to do that, she said.
But what's going to happen is this is going to really put a kink in their fundraising.
Well, it's going to put a kink in their fundraising. There are parades. I mean, some of them actually have serious meetings. John McCain was going to Afghanistan, so he's furious. But the reality is that there's only about four people involved in the debt talks. Nobody else is involved in them, and so they all know that they're really there for the optics.
Well, of course. I mean, because, hey, you know, when I've got a deadline, I got to go to work every day. No vacation for me.
Exactly. No soup for you.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, we should just lock all of them in a room and say nobody comes out until you have an agreement. If you have to beat it out of each other, then that's what has to happen.
I think I'm with you on that.
You know, because here in this state, for 8 years, we couldn't get a budget passed, and I was a big fan of lock the door from the outside, and you can't go to the bathroom until you're done.
Oh, God.
Just get it. That's your job. You got one job. Do it. It's not that hard. And finally, looks like no NBA season?
No NBA season. Yeah, there is a labor agreement that expires at midnight, threatening the 2011-2012 season. NBA owners are set to lock out their players because the talks collapsed. That would be the second major work stoppage because the NFL is also in the middle of a lockout, so nobody's playing games.
Well, maybe we'll just have to pay attention to our families and, you know what, maybe go outside and play basketball ourselves. Who knows? Victoria Jones, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Surprise, surprise, we're going to be talking about the budget tonight again. Harrisburg's Act 47 team has backed off firefighter and police layoff request. The Act 47 team is no longer recommending that Harrisburg lay off 27 police officers and 12 additional firefighters on an as-needed basis should it adopt its fiscal recovery plan. The plan still recommends the elimination of 5 firefighters and 3 park rangers. Last night, City Council told the Act 47 team that it did not want a plan that included firefighter and police layoffs. There's already been some pushback on this budget. This seems to be the first salvo in what I believe will be quite a few. There's going to be a lot of communities like Harrisburg that are going to have some real problems. And of course, with Harrisburg, you have the additional problem of possibly going under. But also, this budget that the governor just proposed, there's going to be a lot of pushback. Talking about pushback, a couple government reformers who have been quite active around Harrisburg for the last 10 years. These two reformers have spoken out about the way the school voucher legislation has been handled. These two outspoken government reform advocates say the last-minute push to consider legislation that would bring school vouchers to Pennsylvania reminds them of what they consider to be legislative hijinks that produced the 2005 pay raise law and 2004 slots legislation law. Both of these controversial laws came together in the final hours around consideration of a state budget without a public venting of the final terms of the legislation. How is this different? Said citizen activist Eric Epstein, whose RockTheCapitol.com played a role in inciting public outrage over the pay raise that led lawmakers to rescind the raises for legislatures and the executive branch a few months after approving. According to him, this is an anti-democratic ruse. Governor Tom Corbett on Tuesday called for the legislator to send him a school voucher bill. He said there was still time to get it done before lawmakers leave for summer break. He wants to deliver on his cornerstone of his educational platform from his gubernatorial campaign last year. He followed up his call for action during a news conference with a closed-door meeting with legislative leaders where he made another push for the legislature to act after an earlier effort had stalled out. Tom Potts, who's co-founder of another organization called Democracy Rising, said a dramatic educational reform like this demands a thorough venting, particularly given the price tag that it could carry. If they do this, they are going to buy themselves a lot of trouble next year, unquote, when all 203 House members, 25 Senate seats stand up for election. Epstein echoed that sentiment, quote, this legislation has the potential to reignite the outrage we witnessed with the pay raise. I fervently hope that he is right. As I said on this program several times, Ray, I do believe the Republicans have very much underestimated the political pushback. Another interesting turn on the battle up in the Hill. The Republicans are now are having a little family squabble over the school tax bill. Apparently what has happened, within the framework of the bill, what it does, it puts some real restrictions on how school districts can raise money. And according to the information that has come out about the budget, it has limited school districts' right to raise funds. They can only raise something akin to the rate of inflation. In other words, they're very much limited. Apparently what has happened, some Republicans have been getting a lot of pushback from school districts who said, look, we have some, right now we're in the process of some construction. We have it within our budget and we don't have enough means to pay for it. You're going to have to give us an exemption. And therein lies the fight. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, right? One other story, kind of negative from Philadelphia. The city council actually passed legislation which would have given paid sick leave to their workers, and the mayor vetoed it. There are paid sick leave efforts underway in several other cities around the country, including Denver, New York City, Massachusetts, and Georgia. I do believe that paid sick leave is going to be pushed very much by the labor movement, and I very much endorse that. I think you're going to see more and more and more of that. And actually, there's studies, more and more studies coming out, where not only is it a positive effect, but now you see that even though a lot of employers fought this legislation, now that they see the positive effects, the report that came out of the AFL-CIO, better than 3 out of 4 employers in the survey that they, the employers that they talked to, better than 3 out of 4 employers now have a positive reaction to this law. So that's good news.
I'm against it. I'm against the idea of making a law. That's why you should organize. That's why you should collectively bargain. Another one of those things that giving away. I think a quick break. We will be right back after this. If anyone's left, we'll wrap things up.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours, in a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in labor's forgotten massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you missed any portion of the program, right there it is for your convenience, your entertainment. I'll take it with you on the go, and hopefully very soon we will have our Stitcher app ready to go so you can take it on your smartphones wherever you go. Some interesting stories that I didn't get to today, kind of a whole bunch of real quick hitters. Evidently, out in Clifton Heights, Pennsylvania, that's the southeastern part of the state, there was a grandmother who was very angry at her 9-year-old grandson who allegedly ate too much bacon. That's right. She believed he ate too much of the bacon and didn't leave any for anyone else, so she knocked him to the ground, blasted him in the face with a hose, and beat him in the legs. The police arrested her, and she is in jail, being held on $25,000 bail. Now, you know, the whole bacon thing, yeah, our producer here got a jar of bacon jelly. Can't make this up. Some kind of bacon marmalade. It's like a heart attack in a jar. I assume if Jake, you were to put your finger in his bacon jelly, he would beat you and spray you in the face with a hose.
Beat me senseless, Ray.
And you would deserve it.
Bacon marmalade. Now I've heard it all.
They had bacon-covered chocolate, or chocolate-covered bacon, or... That's
Rick,
just,
you know me. I eat anything. That even me, that doesn't sound good.
There you go. Well, here, I thought you were kind of a sewer. The story out of New York, a collector of erotica, he has 350 pieces of, or 350,000 pieces of erotica. Really, I mean, I guess this is just as a kid, he was a porn freak. Now he's got 350,000 pieces of porn dating back to the 13th century. He's got it all. He's got every hustler, every playboy ever made. He's got all kind of pornographic books and films and you name it. He's got it. 350,000 of them. He spent approximately $1 million on his collection. And he says, well, you know, that's over a 30-year period. So actually, it's like $30,000 a year. That isn't a whole lot, is it? Yes, that's a whole lot to spend on porn. Someone, you need help. Someone help the poor guy. President Obama's getting beat up. Did you hear this one? He made a mistake on his daughter's age, so they're kind of beating him up a little bit. See, on Monday, she's going to be 13, so he automatically said she's 13. I've done this. I have a two and three quarter year old. I say she's three. She's almost three. Not a big deal, but you know, got a lot of, here's the shiny thing time. So there you go. The AP had to have a story. Here's a good one from Baldwin, Missouri. A Missouri man was pulled over, issued a ticket. Why? Well, he gave a fellow motorist the finger. That's right. He decided that he wanted to pass a message along. So the policeman pulled him over, said, you know what, giving you a ticket. And they gave him a ticket for extending any part of his body outside of the vehicle. The only time you're supposed to be able to put a hand outside of the car is for signaling purposes. So this guy's saying, look, I'm in compliance. I was signaling. I was doing the single. I was giving the signal right there. The happy you go, feel free.
So does that mean that if he would have given the signal within the framework of the car, it would have been legal?
Evidently. Because as many times as I've been flipped off over the years, when I used to drive, the trucks were pegged at 61 miles an hour. And going up hills, you'd go 50, 40, 30, 20, 15. And then you have old ladies with walkers going by you. You know, ladies. You know,
well, I don't want to say it. Or should I say it? Naked women sometimes passing you in the night?
Oh, don't remind me. I never got any of the good
People
ones.
People think we're kidding on that one.
Huh? I never got any of the good ones. Here's a good story out of Seattle. Evidently, the police decided that, you know what, it'd be nice to drive around the city with a rifle on the trunk. Somebody snapped a picture of the unattended rifle on the unattended police car, and they're going, sorry, well, you know, it happens. It's unacceptable that we left the rifle unattended. What they're saying may have happened. One police officer pulled it out of their car, put it on the car next to them, and the other person drove away, and there went your gun. Here's an interesting, and you got to go, how does this happen, and how drunk do you have to be? Or maybe he wasn't drunk, don't know. This guy in Houston was driving his car, and he was pulled over for failure to stop, a felony failure to stop. He evidently hit somebody, and then 10 minutes later, notice there's a person sitting in the car of his seat, right there in the front seat with him. Of course, you know, not too well off. Evidently, this guy had come through the windshield, landed in the seat. There's a dead body with a missing leg in the passenger seat, and he didn't realize it.
How is that possible?
He was drunk off his behind.
He must have been totally.
Yeah, he was charged with driving while intoxicated. He was also charged with...
That sounds like homicide by vehicle.
Failure, felony to stop and render aid. They've listed a whole bunch of things. But, you know, he continued to drive on down the road until the cops stopped him.
Wow.
Man, oh, man. Here's a story out of Florida, and you got to love Florida. Florida police said a man who stole a bag of what he thought was a bunch of cash from the manager at Popeye's Chicken, he got a bunch of worthless paper instead. I guess the guy was taking some work home with him, and the manager took some work home with him in a paper bag. He walked out to his car. Guy rode up to him, showed him a handgun, snatched the bag, and ran. Rode off on his scooter.
So he robbed him of paper.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. In Rolling Meadows, Illinois, police said a man turned in a bag of $17,000 in cash. So had the guy in Florida realized that the guy in Illinois had this cash, maybe that would have been a good robbery. So the guy, trying to be, and this goes under the no good deed goes unpunished category. So he goes to the police and he says, here's a bag of cash. Tells the police where he claims he found it. Well, the police went and checked the video footage of the surveillance cameras at the ATMs. Turns out, guy wasn't anywhere near there. That's not where it happened. Turns out the guy said, I didn't find it there. I found it somewhere else. But I was much more comfortable dealing with the Rolling Meadows police than I was the police in the other departments. I thought I'd turned it in. He was cited $500 for filing a false police report. So, again, no good deed goes uncovered, unpunished. Personally, he probably should have just kept the bag of cash and been done with it.
And he got fined.
Filing a false police report. Well, wow. It's one of those things, man. You at least be honest. I mean, you're going to be honest to return a bag of cash. Why would you then lie to the police?
I guess the question then begets, if he turns it in, then what happens to that money? If they can't find the person.
I guess it goes back to him, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I'm not sure how that whole thing works.
I don't know. Is there a law on the books? It's, I don't know.
Then why'd you ask?
Just in case I find a bag of cash and I turn it in, And
call me. I'll help you with it. I'll take it off your hands.
You wait by the phone. When I find one, I'll give you a call.
I've always dreamt of going, because my wife and I used to scuba dive before children. BC, before children. And our dream was always, and still is, to go to Australia and dive on the Great Barrier Reef if we haven't destroyed it by then and it hasn't completely bleached out. But one of the fears, and my wife is really kind of freaked out about it ever since that movie, I forget what it was called, where they left the scuba divers out in the ocean for a couple of days. Well, it turns out, this guy went to go snorkeling out in the Great Barrier Reef, and the boat forgot him. Left him out there, just took off back to shore. Fortunately for him, there was another boat somewhere near that he could swim to, jump on. But I love how they handled it. you got to love how they handled it. They refunded his money, and they gave him a coupon to go to a restaurant. And said, hey, it's okay. And the police said, don't worry about it. He was okay. He wasn't in any real danger. They gave him a letter of apology. They gave him his money back. And, quote, he was also given a voucher to use at one of our better restaurants to say, look, sorry for that. They left him out in the ocean.
Mm.
Man, scary, scary stuff. Remind me to make sure that if I ever get to go.
They bring you back.
That I don't go on that tour. Well, no, I've gone scuba diving in some places where you go, really? I'm going to go out on that boat with you? When I went to Mexico, we went out on these little tiny boats out 2-3 miles out. I'm going, am I dumb or what? And the answer is yes. Lastly, Pope Benedict the 16th today accepted the resignation of U.S. bishop accused of allowing an alleged pedophile priest to escape to Mexico. This is another one of those things. The guy was being charged, and he allowed him to escape out the back door and head to Mexico. And I look at this whole school voucher thing, and I got to be honest with you. I'm not so sure I want to turn the kids over to the Catholic schools. Sorry, not going there. Anyway, I want to thank everyone who was on the program tonight. especially you and, of course, our board op. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the foot of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.